Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
During a natural disaster or an economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Welcome, Moors to Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, and tonight we have an explosive broadcast. We're going to be looking at where we are right now in America. What's behind the scenes? What's going on? What's poised to happen? What are the intricate details of our very, very near future? America's plan to eliminate most of its population. What diseases are now in place to destroy American lives? Who is calling for America's reduction in population? What will happen to livestock and stores? What about the collapse of the American dollar? What about biological weapons? What type of natural disasters can strike America? How can we survive? What nations are poised to take over America? These are just a few of the questions that will be answered tonight. The information is already in place. But before we begin, I want to start out by saying that it behooves us to pay attention. And what we should be doing as people inside the United States now is preparing for whatever comes. We should be putting some food aside. We should be putting some water aside. We should be doing that at least once a week. We should be counting the members of our household and make sure that we got enough stockpile that can last for months and take care and accommodate everybody in our household. What type of defense mechanisms do you have? What type of weaponry do you have to protect yourself and your family? We have to take these things seriously. We are in a very critical time in the history of this country. And those of you who are fortunate enough to be on this broadcast have an edge on a lot of people, because there are a lot of people out there that don't have the internet, There are a lot of people that don't own television. There are people that don't own cell phones. They're just out there. They're not paying attention. They don't get a warning the way we do. So we can consider ourselves quite fortunate. Now, in the past, the record of the past, history has repeated itself over and over and over. When we look at the history of ancient history of other cultures and what happened, we will see a common thread that comes all the way up to this day. So if we have this kind of information, we should begin to prepare. Relaxation is over. We've had a wonderful time inside the United States. But now it is time for us to take life seriously. Now, starting out in this broadcast, we're going to be dealing with some preliminary information leading up to the main crux of the information that I'm going to be bringing here tonight. This information in the broadcast is some very, very critical information coming from experts, and it is vital for us to pay attention to this because they're going to say some things in there that we really need to think about and prepare for, because this is no joke. We've had storms and many, many warnings across the United States. There's been tornadoes, earthquakes, floods. There's been hurricanes, all kind of stuff that has happened, and we get up, brush ourselves off, and continue on as if it don't happen. And in our mind, it's like we watch television and we see this happening in California, but we're living in New York. Or it's happening in New York, and we're living in Texas. It's happening in Colorado, but we're in Florida. And so it doesn't go that way. It could have been you. But are you prepared? Are you putting something in motion to be prepared to protect yourself in order to survive whatever it is that's coming upon your area? We have to always be aware of the fact that it could be us at any time. So we must be prepared. Okay? Now we're going to start off with 25 things to do first in the event there's a problem. Okay? 25 things to do first. 25 things to look and take very, very seriously before we get down into this broadcast. Now, at any given point, if somebody has a question, don't hesitate to raise your hand. If you have a question about what's being broadcast here this evening, raise your hand. The number to call into this broadcast is 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. Tomorrow night, we will not have a broadcast, but Saturday night, we are coming back, and we will be dealing with astrology and something that I've used quite extensively during my lifetime, and it worked out very, very well for me, having this knowledge and able to use it. And we will have an open mic session, so if you want to know what your Eastern and Western astrological thing is and what it says about you, you can dial in the broadcast and raise your hand, and we'll open up the line and we'll do you. That's Saturday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Moorish Talk Live 100.
Do you think that you know how to prepare for the collapse of the economy? If so, are you putting that knowledge into action? In America today, people are more concerned about the possibility of an economic collapse than ever before. It has been estimated that there are now 3 million preppers in the United States. But the truth that nobody really knows the actual number, because a lot of preppers keep their prepping to themselves. So what are all of those people preparing for exactly? Well, survey after survey has shown that economic collapse is the number one potential disaster that preppers are most concerned about. Of course, that shouldn't be surprising because we truly are facing economic problems that are absolutely unprecedented. We are living in the greatest debt bubble in the history of the world. The global banking system has been transformed into a high-risk pyramid scheme of debt, risk and leverage that could collapse at any time, and wealthy countries such as the United States have been living way above their means for decades. Meanwhile, the United States is being deindustrialized at a blinding pace and poverty in this country is absolutely exploding. Anyone that is not concerned about the economy should have their head examined. Fortunately, I have found that an increasing number of Americans are becoming convinced that we are heading for a horrific economic crisis. Once they come to that realization, they want to know what they should do. And the reality is that getting prepared is going to look different for each family based on their own unique circumstances. Some people have a lot of resources, while others have very little. Some people are very independent of the system and can move wherever they want, while others are totally dependent on their jobs and must stay near the cities at least for now. In addition, it is important to distinguish between the short term and the long term when talking about economic collapse. As I have written about previously, our economic collapse is not going to happen all at once. It is going to unfold over time. In the short term, many are moving money around and are building up emergency funds to prepare for the next recession. For the long term, many are storing up food and huge stockpiles of survival supplies in order to be prepared for the total collapse of society. Both approaches are wise, but it is important to keep in mind that different approaches will be needed at different times. The strategies posted below are a mix of both short-term and long-term strategies. Some will be important for our immediate future, while others may not be needed for a number of years. But in the end, you will be very thankful for the time and the effort that you spent getting prepared while you still could. The following are 25 things that you should do to get prepared for the coming economic collapse. Number 1, an emergency fund. Do you remember what happened when the financial system almost collapsed back in 2008? Millions of Americans suddenly lost their jobs, and because many of them were living paycheck to paycheck, many of them also got behind on their mortgages and lost their homes. You don't want to lose everything that you have worked for during this next major economic downturn. It is imperative that you have an emergency fund. It should be enough to cover all of your expenses for at least 6 months, but I would encourage you to have an emergency fund that is even larger than that. Number 2, don't put all of your eggs into one basket. If the wealth confiscation in Cyprus has taught us anything, it is that we should not put all of our eggs in one basket. If all of your money is in one single bank account, it would be easy to wipe out. But if you have your money scattered around a number of different places, it will give you a little bit more security. Number 3, keep some cash at home. This goes along with the previous point. While it is not wise to keep all of your money at home, you do want to keep some cash on hand. If there is an extended bank holiday or if a giant burst from the sun causes the ATM machines to go down, you want to be able to have enough cash to buy the things that your family needs. Just ask the people of Cyprus how crippling a bank holiday can be. One way to keep your cash secure at home is by storing it in a concealed safe. Number 4, get out of debt. A lot of people seem to assume that an economic collapse would wipe out all debts, but that will probably not be the case. In fact, if you are in a tremendous amount of debt, you will be very vulnerable if the economy collapses and you are not able to find a job. Just ask the people who were overextended and lost their jobs during the last recession. So please get out of debt. Many debt collectors are becoming increasingly ruthless. In many areas of the country, they are now routinely putting debtors into prison. You do not want to be a slave to debt when the next wave of the economic collapse strikes. Number 5, gold and silver. In the long term, the United States dollar is going to lose a tremendous amount of value and inflation is going to absolutely skyrocket. That is one reason why so many people are investing very heavily in gold, silver and other precious metals. All over the globe, the central banks of the world are recklessly printing money. Everyone knows that this is going to end very badly. In fact, there is already a push in more than a dozen the United States states to allow gold and silver coins to be used as legal tender. Someday you will be glad that you invested in gold and silver now while their prices were still low. Number 6, reduce your expenses. A lot of people claim that they can't put any money toward prepping, but the truth is that we all have room to reduce our expenses. We all spend money on things that we do not really need. Those that are lean and mean will tend to do much better during the times that are coming. Number 7. Start a side business. If you do not have much money, a great way to increase your income is by starting a side business. And it does not take a lot of money. There are many side businesses that you can start for next to nothing. And starting a side business will allow you to become less dependent on your job. In this economic environment, a job could disappear at literally any time. Number 8. Move away from the big cities if possible. For many people, this is simply not possible. Many Americans are still completely and totally dependent on their jobs. But if you are able, now is a good time to move away from the big cities. When the next major economic downturn strikes, there will be rioting and a dramatic rise in crime in the major cities. If you are able to move to a more rural area, you will probably be in much better shape. Number 9. Store food. Global food reserves have reached their lowest level in nearly 40 years. As the economy gets even worse and global weather patterns become even more unstable, the price of food will go much higher and global food supplies will become much tighter. In the long run, you will be glad for the money that you put into long-term food storage now. Number 10. Learn to grow your own food. This is a skill that most Americans possessed in the past, but that most Americans today have forgotten. Growing your own food is a way to become more independent of the system, and it is a way to get prepared for what is ahead. Number 11. Nobody can survive without water. Without water, you would not even make it a few days in an emergency situation. It is imperative that you have a plan to provide clean drinking water for your family when disaster strikes. Number 12. Have a plan for when the grid goes down. What would you do if the grid went down and you suddenly did not have power for an extended period of time? Anyone that has spent more than a few hours without power knows how frustrating this can be. You need to have a plan for how you are going to provide power to your home that is independent of the power company. Number 13. Have blankets and warm clothing on hand. This is more for emergency situations or for a complete meltdown of society. During any major crisis, blankets and warm clothing are in great demand. They also could potentially make great barter items. Number 14. Store personal hygiene supplies. A lot of preppers store up huge amounts of food, but they forget all about personal hygiene supplies. During a long crisis, these are items that you would greatly miss if you do not have them stored up. These types of supplies would also be great for barter. Number 15. Store medicine and medical supplies. You will also want to store up medical supplies and any medicine that you may need. In an emergency situation, you definitely would not want to be without bandages and a first aid kit. Over the course of a long crisis, you do not want to run out of any medicines that are critical for your health. Number 16. Stock up on vitamins. A lot of preppers do not think about this either, but it is very important. These days, it is becoming increasingly difficult to get adequate nutrition from the foods that we eat. That is why it is very important to have an adequate store of vitamins and other supplements. Number 17. Make a list of other supplies that you will need during any crisis. There will be a lot of other things that you will need in addition to food and water. The following are just a few basic things that it would be wise to have on hand: an axe, a can opener, flashlights, battery-powered radio, extra batteries, lighters or matches, fire extinguisher, sewing kit, tools. This list could be much, much longer, but hopefully this will get you started. Number 18. Don't forget the special needs of your babies and your pets. Young children and pets have special needs. As you store supplies, don't forget about the things that they will need as well. Number 19. Entertainment. This may sound trivial, but the truth is that our entertainment-addicted society would become very bored and very frustrated if the grid suddenly went down for an extended period of time. Card games and other basic forms of entertainment can make enduring a crisis much easier. Number 20. Self-defense. In the years ahead, being able to defend your home and your family is going to become increasingly important. When the economy crashes, people are going to start to become very desperate. And desperate people do desperate things. Number 21. Get your ammunition while you still can. Your firearms will not do you much good if you do not have ammunition for them. Already there are widespread reports of huge ammunition shortages. The following is from a recent CNS news article. The run on ammunition has manufacturers scrambling to accommodate demand and reassure customers, as many new and seasoned gun owners stock up over fears of new firearms regulations at both the state and federal levels. Don't just assume that you will always be able to purchase large amounts of ammunition whenever you want. Get it now while you still can. Number 22, if you have to go. Have a plan for what you and your family will do if you are forced to leave your home. If you do have to go, the following are some items that you will want to have on hand: a map of the area, a compass, backpacks for every member of the family, sleeping bags, warm clothing, comfortable shoes or hiking boots. Number 23, community. One of the most important assets in any crisis situation is community. If you have friends or neighbors that you can depend upon, that is invaluable. The time spent building those bonds now will pay off greatly during a major crisis. Number 24, have a backup plan and be flexible. Mike Tyson once said the following: everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. No plan ever unfolds perfectly. When your plan is disrupted, what will you do? It will be imperative for all of us to have a backup plan and to be flexible during the years ahead. Number 25, keep your prepping to yourself. Do not go around and tell everyone in the area where you live about your prepping. If you do, then you may find yourself overwhelmed with visitors when everything falls apart. And please do not go on television and brag about your prepping to a national audience. Prepping is something that you want to keep to yourself, unless you want hordes of desperate people banging on your door in the future.
Okay, there you have it. 25 things to think about. I will encourage you to listen to this broadcast over and over and over until you get everything in place. Better be safe than sorry, and the greatest focal point in your life is when preparedness and opportunity meet. Regardless of what we do and what information is being put out about people preparing for an economic collapse or preparing for a natural disaster, people are going to continue to do the same thing. Absolutely nothing. But that don't have to be you. I'm always prepared. I do everything that I can to be prepared, and I suggest you do the same thing. This is some very, very valuable information. We have to realize that in any grocery store inside the United States, there's only approximately 72 hours worth of food. And then you're going to have to contend with the fact that the owners of these stores and the district managers and the general managers are going to have their family members covered first. And they will be the first ones looting at 1, 2, and 3, and 4 o'clock in the morning and getting the most valuable goods out to be kept and placed aside for the long haul in the event of a coming catastrophe. And when those store doors do open, the only thing that's left is what you can get, which you discover would be very little. However, if you prepare now, right now, get you some stuff in the can, whatever it takes, you know, put it to the side. Make sure you got plenty of water, good fresh water. That's very, very important. We have survival packages located at newdebtelimination.com, which goes into great detail by professionals to show you how to survive any type of catastrophe or collapse. I recommend that you go over to newdebtelimination.com and access that information. It's very, very critical. There's information on paper, there's information on audio, and there's information on video by experts and people who have actually lived through natural disasters and the things that they've done to survive. Information is critical. We live in an information age today, and so we have to take advantage of what's coming. Now, we're going to be putting out some critical information tonight, and shortly we're going to be going into the main crux of what this broadcast is all about. So you all just pay attention to everything that's being brought out here today, because all of this information is very critical to our survival. All right? Okay.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and, of course, B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Thing we need to discuss at some length is the rise of China. It's certainly making the press these days. People seem to understand that something's happening in China, but most people are not fully aware of the full breadth and depth of what's happening in China. In fact, most of the people in China do not understand the historical implications of what's going on. China is the next great country in the world, whether we like it or not. There are a lot of people who do not like the rise of China. The 19th century was the century of the UK. The 20th century was the century of the US. The 21st century is going to be the century of China.
Turning now to some corporate news, the largest takeover of an American company by a Chinese buyer. Smithfield Foods, one of the biggest pork producers in the U.S., has agreed to sell itself to a Chinese firm for $4.7 billion. The boards of both companies have already okayed the sale, but as Michelle Caruso Cabrera tells us, the deal will likely face heavy scrutiny.
The United States did something it has never done before. It cleared the takeover of a U.S. bank by a Chinese state-controlled company.
This does, however, demonstrate an ever-increasing American interest in the Pacific, but many are questioning the exact motives behind the move, and none are more critical than China.
Manhattan's tallest building is drawing criticism from New Yorkers. It's over a decision to honor the 60th anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party's takeover of China by shining red and yellow lights.
Totalitarian dictatorship should not be honored by the Empire State Building tonight.
Protesters are red with anger over the Empire State Building's decision to honor China's Red Revolution.
Bulls and bears on what happens to U.S. in this China syndrome.
What is practiced in China is not free market. It's not freedom. I mean, they kill their political dissidents. They do bad things to their people that disagree with them.
The same consulate that has worked to incite hate crimes on U.S. soil against groups like Falun Gong. And the same consulate that represents a regime that's caused tens of millions of deaths since it took over China exactly 60 years ago.
America does not support China's government because China's government is the enemy of human rights, enemy of freedom.
During the games, athletes and visitors have been exposed to a very different language, Chinese.
Former President George W. Bush actually started a national security language initiative and invested $114 million into expanding these programs all the way from the elementary school level up to the university level. So before Ohlone, you could really only take Chinese language classes in certain select elite colleges and universities, but now, you know, you're seeing these 7 and 8 year olds who are pretty fluent. And, you know, the educators that I spoke with in my story are saying that they're really hoping that these people can be the next Hillary Clintons and Barack Obamas and hopefully bridge the gap between the United States and China.
Bukachi. What is Bukachi?
Mandarin Chinese really isn't that hard to learn and speak.
Ni hao, ni hao ma.
To bring American jobs back to America. So this week it was shocking to learn so many great infrastructure projects are underway in America, rebuilding bridges and roads in American cities, but they've hired Chinese firms and Chinese workers.
Let's see. This is made in China. Made in China. China.
为什么强大的国家都会走向灭亡呢? 希腊、罗马帝国、美国，因为他们都犯同样的错误，与原来使他们成功的原则背道而驰。美国政府企图以庞大的开支和税收来摆脱严重的经济衰退，巨额的所谓刺激开支、庞大的医疗改革，政府接管私有企业，债务。
For very easily, and so we become a market, we become indebted in US dollars, and the locally overvalued currency makes it easy to buy dollars so that we can pay foreign debt. China does what any intelligent sovereign country should do, which is exactly the opposite. They have an undervalued currency, or they just let it slide to its real and true value so that they can export a lot, and they do not yet become a mass market for other countries' products. So in a way, I think that the Chinese are doing the right thing. I think that they are continuing to grow. And of course, this raises many concerns in America, Britain, and the European Union, basically the euro and dollar zone, because they would like to see countries doing the things they wanted to do, as Argentina, Brazil, and many other countries do, but China will just not toe that line.
Chinese Defense Minister General Liang Guangye and a team of top military officials toured the U.S. Marine Corps base at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina on Wednesday. This is the first visit to the U.S. by a Chinese defense minister in 9 years. Liang and his 24-member delegation arrived in a helicopter. U.S. Marines welcomed them and took them for a tour of the base.
Long Beach Naval Weapons Shipyard, one of the only deepwater ports in America that our military controls. Actually, only one of three. And it's the only one on the western side of the United States controlling the Pacific. The Clinton administration decided to shut it down in 1993, and now he's letting his good buddies, the military industrial complex of China, leadership of China, to have our only deep water port right in the heart of our western coastline.
China's military rise, which America fears next.
Chinese experts say the real aim of America's pressure on Iran is regime change. They believe Washington wants to destroy the Islamic Republic in order to strengthen its dominance in the Middle East.
Hillary Clinton, recently it was reported, and I want to get your take on this, Bob, in Beijing, China, where she was over there to broker a deal on any future borrowing that we might do from China by way of bonds, treasuries. And, well, there's a little caveat that was thrown in this. If the United States defaults on this, and we're talking trillions of dollars, that there's a little thing that the United States government will institute called eminent domain to pay the Chinese back with real estate. Have you heard anything on this, Bob?
Oh, yes. And it's possible and it's probable.
Warships from the East China Sea Fleet of the PLA Navy have arrived in the Western Pacific Ocean to conduct maritime drills. The two warships, Foshan and Huaihua, are first and the second generation missile frigates. The exercise is their first flu water training drill. Earlier, the warships conducted a series of mock exercises during its voyage to the Western Pacific Ocean, a covert surveillance and tested nighttime capabilities.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, Allahu
Akbar. My family, my whole family, Muslim. So, my father, my mother, grandfather, grandmother. And now in China, more and more Muslim. Lots of my friends, before they are not Muslim, but now they're Muslim.
Chinese Muslims.
Boys, I love you both, but I want you to do what I would do. Kill this piece of...
They mess with the wrong family.
How did this happen?
There's a new class of weapons. Everything went offline and never came back. They wipe us out, including U.S. Central Command.
What am I supposed to do?
I'm gonna fight. Anybody who wants to join is welcome to it. We'll hit them on our terms.
We're the Wolverines.
We create chaos. We need to steal that weapon.
It'd be the foothold we need and take our homes back. I can.
Yes, you can. Relax. Squeeze. We inherited our freedom. Now it's up to all of us to fight. For them, this is just some place. For us, this is our home.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Now, that is some very critical information involving China. And without further ado, I'm ready to go down into the crux of this matter and the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins. And by far, I think this is one of the most important videos about our current situation inside the United States. And I'm going to ask if you all pay very, very close attention to this interview, okay? Very critical.
From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, creation, how science is reinventing life itself. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Our dear friend, the father of modern-day ufology, as I call him, Stanton Friedman, suffered a heart attack Friday. We hear now that he is home, somewhat recovering, laughing, so that's a good sign. Prayers with you, Stanton. Thursdays, doctors will decide what other options to proceed. Keeping our fingers crossed. More than 600,000 Facebook users have taken part in a psychological experiment organized by the social media company without their knowledge. Maybe it was you. Facebook altered the tone of the user's news feed to highlight either positive or negative posts from their friends, which were seen on their news feed. They then monitored the user's response to see whether their friend's attitude had an impact on their own.
Jeez.
In Middleton Township, Pennsylvania, fire officials in Bucks County are investigating what caused a laptop computer to simply explode, injuring the woman who is using it inside her home. The fire chief there says he's been fighting fires for 25 years, and he said he's never seen anything like it. The laptop exploded, the woman's skirt caught fire, she was burned on the face, arms, foot, chest. It appears the battery pack inside the computer simply went off like a bomb, sending debris 6 to 8 feet away. Protesters voiced their anger over the controversial water shutoffs in Detroit. It's a tough situation. The Detroit Water and Sewerage Department sent out more than 46,000 shutoff notices in the spring. They have so far turned off water to about 4,500 customers. Community activists and religious leaders met outside of the governor's Midtown office, asking him to impose an immediate moratorium on the shutoffs. They also want the city to work out some kind of affordable payment plan based on a person's income. Horribly tough situation. One, you don't want to shut off people's water or utilities. My gosh, they need to survive. But Some people pay, other people don't. Let's check in with Catherine Austin Fitz, our investment advisor. Catherine, this is a tough situation. What do you do in a case like this?
This is very tough, George, because if you look at the water operation in Detroit, its expenses are greater than its revenues. So you've got to get the money from someplace, and there are lots of different things that can do. We started to see something happening in Detroit that you saw in Latin America when this happened. It's called participatory budgeting. And, when you have a city like Detroit that's had significant drop in population and now filing for bankruptcy, we're going to have to see the sort of solutions are more and more citizens getting in there and participating in the budget, giving their time and figuring out, okay, how can we make more, how can we get more from less? Because we're going to have to, I've got to tell you, you've got to balance your revenues with your expenses. Something's got to give.
Well, water is probably the cheapest of all the utilities. It's cheaper than natural gas. It's cheaper than electricity. And if people can't even pay their water bill, what's it going to be like in the winter when they have to pay for that gas and they have to keep their furnace running with electricity?
It's very tough. It's very tough, George. And in fact, we can expect sort of the prices of basic things, food, et cetera, to go, to rise. So now is the time for people in Detroit to look at growing more food locally and, finding ways of doing more with less.
All right, Catherine, thanks so much. And you're going to be with me in the studio sometime next week. I'm looking forward to that. General Motors' latest recall, man, it just doesn't stop. They have now recalled another 8.4 million vehicles today. Why? Because of faulty ignition switches. The majority of the cars are in the United States. It's a disaster for General Motors. They're working on settlements now for the people who have died because the ignition switch went off, the airbags didn't work, the cars would crash. I wonder where they had the switches made. I don't think they were made in the United States. Because I think our workers would put together some pretty good quality stuff. I suspect that these ignition switches were made overseas. Maybe we'll find out. In Chrysler, they're adding about 700,000 minivans and SUVs to a 2011 recall to fix faulty ignition switches. The latest recall, the Dodge Journey SUVs, the Chrysler Town & Country, the Dodge Caravan minivans from 2007 to 2009 model years, both sold in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. You know, when I was a kid growing up in Detroit, the workers there, wow, they had so much pride building American-made cars with American-made parts. Doesn't happen anymore. Atlantic City started the year with 12 casinos. By Labor Day, it could be down to 9. Casino saturation. Let's check in with Howard Bloom, the human computer. Well, here's another industry that's taking it on the chin, Howard.
It's an implosion, but it looks like an implosion. But in reality, it's an explosion. 2,100 people in a day lost their jobs in Atlantic City when just one of these three casinos that is closed. But you have to realize something. In 1976, when New Jersey legalized gambling, there were no casinos whatsoever in the Northeast Atlantic Strip. Today, there are 48 casinos.
Wow.
When Atlantic City started building its 12 casinos, it was alone. It had a monopoly on gambling. Today, there are 28 casinos were built in just the last 10 years. So the real gamblers here are not the people at the table who are laying down their money and trying to make predictions about what number is going to come up on a roulette wheel. The real gamblers here are the people who are financing casinos and making the decision to plunk their money down. And 48 casinos is more than the Northeast Corridor can handle. Something had to give. And unfortunately, what's giving is Atlantic City. But there are two other factors to keep in mind. One is that 34.4% of the population of Atlantic City lives in poverty. That means to get to the glittering boardwalk with all of those incredible casinos, you go through a slum. And to me, when I did it, to go down to meet with Stevie Wonder a long time ago, It was a jarring experience. It is not a good entertainment experience.
No, it's not
fun.
To
feel like you are rolling money when other people are rolling in pain. So it is not the ideal place to go. And they built a casino called the Revel, and the architecture is gorgeous, and it was meant to appeal to real high rollers. But Atlantic City is known as a working-class gambling town, and upscale people do not want to come back to New York. They want to come back to New York saying, I spent the weekend in Paris, not I spent the weekend in Atlantic City.
And revenue there since 2006 has plummeted.
It's cut in half. It has gone down from $5.2 billion to $2.86 billion. And there's another little factor, and that is that the American wages have stayed at the same level since roughly 1998. They've been frozen. So the amount of excess money, gambling is an entertainment experience. It's a luxury sport. And the amount of money people have for luxury may conceivably not be what it was in the days of Atlantic City's prime.
Howard, we'll talk to you soon enough about some other issues, too. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has warned that anyone caught hiding suspected Ebola virus disease patients will be prosecuted. She told state radio that some patients had been kept in homes and churches instead of receiving medical attention. Sierra Leone issued a similar warning last week, saying some patients had left the hospital, simply gone into hiding. The outbreak, already the deadliest on record in West Africa, 635 cases, 367 fatalities. But what's going on with Ebola? Can it happen here? Up next, Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. It's called Xenogenesis, Changing Men into Monsters. Stephen Quayle with us for the next couple hours as we talk about what's going on this planet, including, of course, all these strange viruses that are out there. Stephen, always a pleasure. How are you?
Thank you, George. It's a delight in one way to be back on you, but it's also kind of bittersweet again because now we're talking tonight about Ebola, and we're also going to talk about anthrax. We're going to talk about tuberculosis and chikungunya, some of the diseases that are loose. But on the Ebola, the thing that's really concerning me and should be concerning everyone is the fact that they can't really yet tie down the specific strain of Ebola. It used to be pretty easy. There used to be a class of four filoviruses, and then they changed that. And what's critical is that when I look for key words in any press release, one of the most unusual words that you can even begin to embrace in this whole Ebola outbreak is an unseen form, if you will, or an unseen strain of Ebola. To me, you know what that immediately says, a genetically altered form. And here's what people really should understand. When I started talking with you, when we first addressed the whole idea of all the scientists that were being murdered, and they were being murdered, whether it looked like an accident or not, they all had one thing in common. They had all at some point worked in either an organization or they had been in special compartmentalized intelligence units of specific laboratories and universities that dealt with bioweapons. George, to put everybody in perspective, you and I dealt with Dr. David Kelly's death within days of him being found in a park in England, in London specifically, and I said he did not commit suicide. He was murdered, obviously, inquest and everything. But getting to the bottom line in this tonight is that, let me just share with people, when you begin to see, and when I say this, rats bailing off the ship, you know the ship is going on taking down water. And what's been happening at the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, is alarming to me. This is one of those neon signs that says something's going on. And I'll quote, an exodus of key leaders and scientists from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention Atlanta has raised great concern among five of the six former directors who led the agency over the past 40 years. Putting that really in quick encapsulated bottom line language, they are bailing out. The most visible sign, writes this story in the Atlanta Journal, a sign of potential trouble at CDC is the loss of more than a dozen high-profile leaders and scientists since 2004. By the end of this year, all but two of the directors of CDC's eight primary scientific centers will have left the Atlanta-based federal agency. I believe a lot of people know what's going on, and obviously we've got whistleblowers like Snowden and others trying to tell the real state of the union, the real state of what's going on in the government. But what people have to understand is all the years that different guests on your show, Coast to Coast, and the radio shows I've done with so many people have addressed this, is the plan to lower the population of the planet. The fastest way to do that is with genetically altered strains of some of the most deadly viruses in the world. And remember when you and I spoke of Ebola pox years ago, the combination of Ebola and smallpox?
Sure do. That was a disaster then. It's worse now.
It's worse now. So what's really troubling to me is that, to put into perspective, the entire genome for the Spanish flu, as you know, was sequenced and it was put out on the Internet. Now, if insanity rules a day, triple insanity must rule the power elite, to the point where they want to mock the people of the planet for what they're getting ready to do. And I think that the people have got to understand, you know, everything is about nuclear weapons. But when I wrote my book, Breathe No Evil, I started talking about this, as you know, good 15 years ago, when it wasn't even popular. Most people didn't even know, really, in those days, outside of scientists and weapons designers, about bioweapons or chemical weapons. But the point that is, a nuke may be able to destroy a city, but the flu virus, genetically altered, is potentially a destroyer of civilizations. So when you make the entire genetic sequence known universally, the point being is that you can almost buy do-it-yourself a genetic manufacturing kits now, and the point being is that you can buy a mass spectrometer and some of the scientific instruments that you would need, and also gene splicing stuff used on the secondary market, stuff that used to cost $1 million for $10,000. So any microbiologist who is obviously at a PhD level, or anybody who was a former weapons designer, you and I spoke years ago, for instance, of Boris Pashnek. He was one of the scientists murdered, and I would encourage everyone, you know, to go to the Dead Scientist link and look at this. But when we saw defectors like Ken Alabic talking about Ebola pox, you know, when he testified before Congress, the U.S. military and others gave him such a hard time, saying, well, that couldn't possibly be possible. Guess what? Not only was it possible, it was accomplished. So the key to this is for people to watch the headlines and watch for simple changes in language, which can be huge in their ramifications. For instance, Fox News is talking about, their story is, can it come to the United States? I think people have got to understand that the global pandemic and this hodgepodge of different viral agents, then you take into account that I've now begun to call chemtrails the atmospheric Petri dish.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, seriously, when you take into context of the genetic mutations of viruses as they're exposed to ionizing radiation, i.e. from Fukushima, i.e. from Hanford, people who are watching the nuclear readings across the country, obviously across the Pacific Ocean, and we're seeing absolute cause and effect. Never in the history of the world has the mainstream media been so silent and so, I would say, complicit in the death and murder, I'm going to call it what it is, of so many people. It will go down in history, just like the WIP, the weapons plant in Carlsbad, that, you know, where we're storing radioactive stuff. There's been a release down there. People are reporting all forms of cancer, and still they're silent. So given the effect of the mutagenic nature of these different viruses and the heretofore unseen specific strains, I would say this: we are experiencing, literally, in accelerating motion, the global design for population reduction. And Africa is the test tube of the globalists. It always has been, and it now is in full play.
Steve, what about Saudi Arabia with MERS, this Middle Eastern respiratory syndrome that has a 35% fatality rate? Ebola looks like it's over 50%. These are huge numbers.
They're huge numbers, but you know what? They're not even starting numbers for the people that design this stuff, because they openly speak, and I've openly quoted them, different spokesmen, that they want 70 to 80% kill ratio. Let's take MERS, and let's take SARS, and let's take all of the different derivations of any type of respiratory illness. So the way that, obviously, and even a pneumonic plague, when we're dealing with these type things, you have to have a vector. You have to have a transmission agent. And what's fascinating to me, you and I did also, and I'm just putting people into perspective, George, how long ago we covered this. The South African scientific community and Wouter Bassan designed race-specific genetic weapons. You can go on any search engine and type in DNA-specific bioweapons and see all the postings. They're in the millions. The point being is that now the whole situation with MERS, understand, if country A wants to blackmail country B, and they can basically send a little sample, and you know that the specific or the majority of your population has a determined genetic marker, and you basically give them the hint, you guys step out of line and we release this. I think that MERS and other viruses like that are, if you will, telegrams of the potential that certain belligerents and others who want something to extract something, I call it basically test tube terrorism. That's what I believe is going on in Saudi Arabia.
Stephen, we're going to take a break in just a moment. I want to come back and talk with you about anthrax and some other viruses that seem to be popping up all over the place. Why do they seem to all be hitting right now, Stephen?
Well, I think the timetable is in play, in motion. And people tend to look at this stuff as linear, but when you see it like I do and you're saying it's all hitting at the same time, it's designed to hit at the same time. When you want to defeat an enemy, you overwhelm their senses. And with everything going on with immigration, and we'll talk about that, you know, I basically coined a term a number of years ago, infectons, people who are intentionally infected with some of the most communicable and deadly disease, basically walking into situations where, for instance, in Ebola, the incubation period can take up to 21 days. So if you infect someone on day five, they can go through half the airports in the world for the next week before showing any sign. So it's my contention, George, that it's a simultaneous release of biological weapons designed to basically rid the population of the desired at least one-third of the world's population.
Stephen Quayle with us for a couple hours. We'll take calls with him next hour. We will be back in a moment as we talk more about xenogenesis, changing men into monsters. And welcome back, Stephen Quayle with us. Stephen, let's talk a little bit, too, about chemtrails. Any updates there?
Well, I think the greatest update that I've received recently is on my website, stevequayle.com. A listener, and it was basically, they took a wrong turn to someplace in Nevada and ended up at this secret air base, George, where all the chemtrail planes are loaded and unloaded. We've seen now complete interior shots of the aircraft that disperse the chemtrail components. And this is what I want to share with people. When they look at the sky and they see different colors of rainbows and they hear the official report that they're just this or that, you know, some kind of atmospheric anomaly. That's not true. What people are seeing is the spectroscopic. They're actually seeing the sunlight diffused and reflected through the different chemical compounds. A spectroscope will show you and tell you, you know, what is the component element in a flame, or, you know, there's obviously mm-hmm. ones that you can use in different optical spectroscopes. But what's happening, based on this couple, and it's on my website, and because of the way my website is set up, I couldn't put the whole narrative in there, but if you go to viewers' photos, you'll see, and it's interesting, they even power their whole, if you will, secret base that no one officially acknowledges. And, oh, by the way, when the guards came to basically tell them to leave, they were sarcastic, saying to the couple, oh, be careful, you don't run over any desert tortoises. The way the military, obviously, and others are trying to get control of all the different land. We saw it at the Bundy Ranch. We're seeing it in Texas, New Mexico, all of the states that obviously border other countries, is to, quote, claim that some species that becomes pretty irrelevant is in danger. So what it is, you'll see the tails, and because they took it with a camera phone, it's not the greatest photo, but it gives you a feel for how elaborate the chemtrail spraying is. One of my concerns has always been that the chemtrails will be used as a binary delivery agent, and the point being is that we do not know all of the different chemical interactions with the viruses. So like I stated before we went to the break, I'm now calling chemtrail spraying the atmospheric petri dish of the chemical and biological weaponeers.
So true. There's a pig virus hitting this planet and this country, Stephen, killing millions and millions of pigs. What's that all about?
Well, the official name of it is porcine epidemic virus, and they call it PEV. And what's interesting about that, George, for the last year, I think it's almost a year to date, maybe in last May it started, and fascinating, it didn't start, and they weren't dealing with it in the hog industry until a delegation from another country came to view the hogs, okay? Literally, it's a true story. So what this is doing, it's basically causing the little piglets to die, and I think it's between 3 and 4 million hogs have died, the piglets, and that's really affecting the bottom line of the ranchers and those who farm these things, and point blank, people who have gone to the stores are seeing the price of bacon and sausage and all pork products rising dramatically. And this is something that I dealt with in my book, Breathe No Evil, and Breathe No Evil is available, but I will not be reprinting it. I only have 200 more copies. You remember when we talked about that, it's interesting. I started out my imaginary war on the United States where basically the Chinese, that's who I named as the bad guys in my book, were basically attacking the agricultural industry. Then the white papers, which is basically the whole defense plan for China. If people know this, the belligerence and the war-like rhetoric, it's so fascinating to me that China now owns 70% of Wall Street, literally. There's rumors they own the Federal Reserve now, and that our tax revenue, and yet we're still seeing this attitude. And by the way, we're under a livestock attack and a people attack. I shared with you in the questions that I think I sent Lisa that the thing that I'm expecting next is hoof and mouth disease to break out, because if you remember when we first started doing shows together, that's what broke out in England, where they had to slaughter all the animals. So it's going by a book. It's going by a script. And it's my contention, it's all designed to be released at once, simply to overwhelm the medical systems. And when you've got the top people at CDC quitting and saying this thing is, something's wrong, something's falling apart, I think that's more evidence to basically affirm what I'm sharing.
Immigration, illegal immigration. I'm all for legal immigration, people, you know, having a better opportunity in this wonderful country. But it's out of control right now, Stephen. And with so many people trying to cross the border, some of them could be sick. Some of them could be carrying illnesses and viruses. What do we do about that?
Well, there should be medical screening. But again, George, I would say the way this arose was to the whole situation. You've had Border Patrol agents. I know you've seen the reports. Eyewitness testimonies, these guys said there's so much tuberculosis coming over. I even saw a couple reports of leprosy. What's fascinating to me is simply this, that there's a lot of ways to fight a war. And by the way, I am also for legal immigration. And, you know, I believe that there's no issues against that. But when you overwhelm the borders, and we're talking other than Latinos, too, we're seeing so many, if you will, sworn and avowed enemies of the United States coming through, that simply, that's where I get the word infectons, which basically means you intentionally expose human beings to some of the most deadly pathogens. You get them across the border in all of the mayhem and chaos, and there is no one checking for them. I think that is the sheerest, either insanity or is the most well-planned biological weapons delivery program that's ever been plotted, planned, and schemingly put into operation.
I think so, too. So of everything that's been going on over the last couple of years, What would you single out, Stephen, as probably the worst offender of this possible plan of eliminating the population?
Well, I think again that it's in our face, George, when you reconstitute the most deadly flu in the history of the world that took out more people in 3 months than the entire World War I did. I'm talking the Spanish flu of 1918. And you and I did a show, just putting it in perspective. That's one nice thing about getting older. At least we can refer to, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. The point being is that they took a live biopsy from a soldier that had died an Eskimo in the permafrost and basically reconstituted it. And I want to share this. When you and I first started talking about mad cow's disease and Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD,
yep.
If you remember, I said, look, that came into our country and into the entire, if you will, knowledge base of Americans through the biological weapons development of New Guinea headhunters. When they would eat the brains of their victims, they came down with Kuru, okay, K-U-R-U. So we sent a bunch of guys down there, bioweaponeers. They culture it and bring it back and make a weapon out of it. For the record, the Syrians are now experiencing the same thing, which would be mad cow disease, which is a form of bovine spongiform encephalopathy, but they're experiencing it on the human level because in many cases there's actual cannibalism going on and they're catching the same disease that has been released and that was cultivated out of the headhunters, interesting, in New Guinea. So we're now seeing, if you will, the coordinated release of all these bioweapons and pathogens, and I believe that's because the New World Order has basically stated, and we've quoted this, ad nauseum, at least I have, that by consent or by conquest, there will be a new world order. The point is, it's going to be by conquest. And the biological aspect of this is, when I say sinisterly brilliant, to flood the borders, to basically get your top scientists knocked off, that means assassinated and murdered, and basically leave it to acts of nature. The other thing that we need to talk about is Tom Bearden, in his marvelous work, and God bless him, but there is a whole, you're going to love this, quantum potential weapons, which the Russians pretty well pioneered, that when the United States had its embassy in Moscow in the 70s, in essence, imagine being able to broadcast a disease. In essence, you can take the disease and the actual, if you will, frequencies or the harmonics of that disease, and through a quartz window. I'm making this super simple. I'll put it up on my website for the people that want to delve into it. But when we're talking about quantum potential biological weapons, most people, that just goes over their head. But simply meaning this, it can be broadcast. Disease can be broadcast. All the science is there, all the studies, the first thing that happens when we say something like, I don't believe it. Well, of course you don't believe it because you don't know anything about it. So what we're seeing now is an increase in behind the scenes in what I call, and Hawk made the statement, the back channels, people are coming forward to say, this is what's going on. Unfortunately, George, no one's ever released the studies, especially our government, with all of the Wi-Fi, with all the electromagnetic frequencies and the irradiation from off the cell towers and everything else. All those things, all those, if you will, waveforms of energy have negative effects on human tissue. You can try and deny it all you want, but the science is there. So basically, convenience, and I would say this, the convenience and the sheer curiosity of people being able to stay in constant communication, they, the Illuminists, have built into this thing multiple fallback positions where they can generate this. And then Fukushima, behind the scenes, you remember when we started talking about the core meltdown and people would mm-hmm. say it never melted down. Now they just admit it.
Of course it did, yeah.
It's insanity, and it's truly insanity. But again, the mainstream media will not deal with this stuff because the same mainstream media is controlled, primarily six networks are controlled by the global financial interests, and it's literally Skynet now on steroids.
Do you see the day where, let's say, the situation in Iraq totally gets out of control? Of course, it already might be. Will there be a release of biologicals out there to kind of shut those people down?
Interesting, yes. I believe that the biological is the hold card. In other words, if you are a behind-the-scene puppeteer and you've made a terrorist army, and you know that terrorist army is fueled by everything that fuels it, besides the finances, but you stir up whatever fervor there needs to be stirred up. The ace in the hole that you maintain for your control is to have a specific bioweapon that can be used against those individuals when you need to rein them in. And that's what I think the sad part is. We're seeing where law enforcement used to be to protect and serve, we're seeing the militarization of law enforcement in this country, and yet there's no mention of all the gang warfare that's going on that's coming across the border. There's no mention of the release. And by the way, 36,000 felons weren't released. The true numbers from insiders that contacted me said that it's up to 72,000. So imagine 72,000 people that someone knew were going to be released, and then obviously having weapons warehoused, and we talked about that years ago, the pre-positioning of weapons throughout the country. So I'm sorry to say this, but we're at a position now where the enemies without are within, and it's going to be a very, very difficult situation, and I'm trying to be as kind and gentle as I know how.
And you know, Stephen, though, I'm beginning to sense that something is going to happen within. It just, everything out there just seems to be pinpointed toward something that is going to happen. I mean, they can feel it. Do you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because Solomon was one of the wisest guys in the world. Whether people believe it or not, he really did exist. And he said, when the wicked rule, the righteous mourn. And somebody says, explain to me, Steve. I've been in contact with a British film company that wants to come over and do an interview with me. I'm not saying whoopee, I'm just saying they have. And they said, what has changed in your country? And one of the answers I give them is the foundations of the country are changing. The entire structure is changing. And a good example is this, is look at the we used to talk in the prophetic future of a one-world religion. That's happening right now daily in Rome and embracing all Islam, and even the evangelicals are signing onto it. Then a one-world currency. The whole point in bringing the United States to its knees financially is to get rid of the American dollar, which has been the basis of all trade in oil. And so Russia and China got sick of worthless dollars, and even the administration that now inhabits Washington said they're going to kill the American dollar. I don't think people understand what that truly means, George. When the dollar dies and the financial crash comes, and everybody has seen the headlines so long they've been jaded, it's almost like a normalcy bias. But at that point, everything changes. And if we see the war in the Middle East escalate through ISIS and everything, which I believe it will, at $200, $250 a barrel gasoline, we've never been here before. And been here before is such a country weakened from within, attacked from without, and our military, all of the flag officers and all of the battle-hardened and seasoned generals and admirals and missile launch commanders. Look, these guys aren't being fired for cheating on a test. These are some of the most psychologically profiled and trained individuals in the world. They're being fired because they won't sign on to the, will you fire on Americans? The whole attitude is that there is going to be an uprising in this country that is generated. And what's fascinating is one of the ways, and this is critical, is the biological attack on food is going to become more and more prominent. And the headlines, you're going to see more meat recalled. You're going to see more statements that, we need an artificial supplement. The GMO, genetically modified people, food, are going to be at war with the non-GMO. All the legislation is designed to take away choice from the people. And someone said, where does it all end, Stephen? Here it is. It ends with the control. These people that are bringing all this to pass, it's just like a script.
And it's like, worldwide, too, isn't it?
It's worldwide, yep. And it just doesn't, how do I say this? It doesn't get better. Remember, we used to talk about this stuff in the future, and you'd say, well, I sure hope not,
Yeah.
Well, it's that's why I say it's so heartbreaking to see, because it doesn't take a rock scientist. For instance, a woman sent me an email today. They went to a Burger King in Florida. And on the door, George, was a sign saying, closed. Our trucks, our supply trucks, did not bring our food to us today. Now, that's a national chain, okay? And so can you imagine? Look at Katrina. Remember, and I'm just making a statement here. When people couldn't get what they were used to in fast food,
they panic. They riot.
They panic. And so panic is going to be the order of the day. And most people need to know this. In a system of martial law, every food source in every community, whether it is a restaurant, whether it is a grocery store, a wholesaler, hospitals, school cafeterias, university cafeterias, every place that has food is already basically in the computers, and that will be the first thing that's taken over. In other words, under martial law, so the point being is that's why we've always stressed preparation. My motto for 23 years on talk radio has been simply this. You want to be where everyone else isn't during a panic. You don't want to be waiting in line. And, for instance, look at what we've had now. We've got blood tests that are mandatory where they strap you to a gurney and take blood. We don't have habeas corpus anymore. All of the guarantees we once enjoyed, knew, and I believe it was a blessing of living God, we now are facing an uncertain future with no guarantees, and now the attack on food and water, chemtrail residue gets onto the crops, it gets into the water, and who knows what they're going to add to it. Again, my deepest concern is at some point they change the formula, and all that which is already resident in our lungs, resident in our cells, they add A to B, and guess what? They achieve their goal. And this is, by the way, these are all spelled out in their writings and their statements. They want the world's population taken down by 95%. And I believe they're going to succeed probably with two-thirds of that. And I believe that obviously during that time, people are going to know that they know that they know that this was all planned. And that's why people, as families, as individuals, have got to prepare.
We're going to take some phone calls with you next, Stephen, on Coast to Coast AM.
Okay, Morris, we're back. We're going to go directly into the second segment of this. This is very, very important information for us tonight.
This hour we'll continue talking with Stephen Quayle about his thoughts of course, xenogenesis. And we'll take your phone calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen, at what point in your career did you see these things happening and you decided, I'm going to start saying something about it?
Well, I'd say when I went on talk radio 23 years ago, because in those days, George, I was asked to guest on some different shows, and then obviously I was offered a, I guess you'd say, my own show out of Johnstown, Colorado. But what bothered me was the fact that obviously the history that I knew so well of the world was repeating itself. And being a student of Bible prophecy, whether people want to dismiss that or not, the point is that it's like going by the book, as Johnny Cash's song said, and that's why I've been able to be, I'd say, ahead of the herd. You know, it's tough to embrace this stuff, I understand. And I don't know how many footnotes I have. I don't mean to mislead, but it's in close to 10,000, 10 books, all the talking I've done and everything. I know that there's been some success, but I'm sad because I'm sad on the veterans situation. As you know, you're a veteran, and you know that we've talked about the veterans and the horrific display of contempt for our veterans, I'd say, is the biggest black eye in this country. So it's fascinating to me that even 4 years ago, talking about that, a lot of the veterans just wouldn't have, you know, anything to do with it. And now, obviously, we're seeing that hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants are allowed into this country, but a Marine who's locked in Mexico can't be released. We're allowing hundreds of thousands. I would say the agenda has never been clearer. I'd say this country has never been more divided. Jesus said a house divided against itself cannot stand. So ask yourself this, who has the most to benefit from those who stir up strife? And I would say it's obvious the people that want this country destroyed. And I think it's heinous to sit back, say nothing, and do nothing. And so I can at least look back on my life, you know, and say I did what I could while I had the voice to try and get people to understand that they cannot look to anybody outside of the hand of the living God to help them. Because, again, people are going to panic, George. And when we see pandemics globally, and I think that that will automatically bring aircraft travel to a halt. Now, that's not insanity. That's just a realistic ascertaining and defining of what will be the outcome. Public transportation will cease. And so it's fascinating to me that people in this country no longer can put cause and effect into proper perspective.
Well, that is so true. Stephen, let's take some calls here. Bert is in St. Louis. Hey, Bert, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you. Good morning.
Hi.
I wanted to comment on the possibility of the dollar ceasing to be the world currency.
Sure.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, what analysts project would be replaced by what's called baskets of currencies. There would be a Asian basket of currency headed by the yuan, and a European basket of currency, of course, with the euro, and an American basket of currency with the dollar. And here's the good thing about it. Number one, it would be harder for nations to manipulate artificially high or low currency values, as China, you know, has kept theirs low for many years now. But here's the thing where I think it would benefit our nation. Because the nations of the world have to buy dollars to buy oil, that creates an artificial demand for dollars, which essentially means interest-free loans to the United States, which enables a profligate debtor nation like the United States to continue to be a profligate debtor nation. And so I don't think our nation has been responsible enough fiscally to really be the world currency anymore. And this would be a mechanism to force the United States to be a responsible economic member of the world, and would force them to do so, whereas our government and our Congress and our political system obviously cannot rein in their spending. So in that manner, I think it would be a good thing. So it probably the only way our nation can get a grip on its economic realities.
What do you think of that, Steve?
Well, I think that's idyllic and unrealistic, because the point being is that we're talking about hyperinflation. We can look at the Weimar Republic of Germany to see what hyperinflation leads to. When you've got the smartest people in the world, including a former Treasury official, Paul Craig Roberts, when you've got the understanding that basically what the death of the dollar means, especially if we lose 70% of our purchasing power, and by the way, I agree with him, the United States has been totally irresponsible in our printing money. But what most people don't understand is that every single asset in this country now is pledged as collateral to pretty much the Chinese or whatever sovereign wealth funds are out there. They own the country now. And I would say this, the borrower is servant to the lender. That's why we've got the situation we've got. And basically, I will share this with you, there is no way Russia and China are going to do anything with the West. Europe will capitulate already. Austria has signed its own deal for gas delivery to Russia. What you're going to see, George, is where this idyllic all coming together and having a group hug and singing Kumbaya on the world stage is going to fall flat on its face. And I believe that, the United States has been irresponsible. I'd say that the caller does not understand the ramifications of hyperinflation. And when you've got so many people dependent on someone else's working and generating income, what happens when that stops? Margaret Thatcher said the problem with socialism is at some point you run out of everybody else's money.
That is so true. Stephen, as we begin to look at what's going on worldwide, Russia in Ukraine, China fighting and spatting with Japan, the situation in the Middle East, what does your crystal ball show you?
Well, first of all, you know, I would say this. Obviously, I know cause and effect, and I believe that the Russians will basically, and I think you're seeing it in America's former allies, you're seeing the complete destruction of the United States' former foreign policy. Whether it was right or wrong, we used to have allies. Now we have none. When you have the enemies of 10 years ago now being the army, in essence, the de facto army of the United States. I'm talking about Al-Qaeda. I'm talking about ISIS. When you leave billions of dollars worth of arms on the battlefield, normally you'd bomb those under any type of realistic military. You never leave the enemy weapons that can, they can turn on you. I think this whole thing of the global chaos has to do with pretty much the coming Mahdi, if you will, or the world of eschatology as Muslims relate to it. You cannot have the return of their, if you will, anointed one until you basically have global conflagration, and that even includes nuclear war. So the point is that you've got two different sects, the Sunnis and the Shiites. They're killing each other. They'll join together when they have a common enemy, but ultimately it goes back to killing each other. So the point being is that this whole world destabilization, I believe Russia will make its move against Ukraine. I believe that the countries, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Poland already said, I think you probably saw that, what good is the United States? Japan will come to that conclusion very soon, too. They already are. They're trying to rewrite their constitution on their own defense policies. Meanwhile, North Korea tests more Scud missiles. And what I'm seeing here is a new boy on the block. And all power, it's like gold. Gold moves from weak hands to strong arms. The Chinese own pretty much all of what were formerly the deposits of gold mm-hmm. in the Federal Reserve.
They bought
them
all. They were very smart. Very smart buying that up, weren't they?
Yes, they were. And they know exactly what they're going to do.
Xenogenesis. Tell me about that.
Well, Xenogenesis has gone over, like, I mean, it's been amazing because it's the final book I've written on what the future holds. It was when you and I were talking about robotics and transhumanism mm-hmm. and singularity, and you've had obviously Ray Kurzweil and others on, what it basically boils down to, and this is the basic argument, is scientists believe they can do a better job. Obviously, as a Christian, I believe God created mankind, but they're going to create something of their own imagination under, I believe, the guidance of very malevolent forces. And it's a prophetic fulfillment. And Jesus said, if the days weren't shortened, there'd be no flesh left alive. That word flesh is humanity. So in Xenogenesis, there's probably the best argument that I know, and I'm quoting all the people that are saying, look, this is what's coming. And here's the thing. If you've got somebody who's had a bad day and he's programming the robot that's supposed to control the future and be free of human emotions but be totally logical, like I guess you'd say Dr. Spock's twin, what happens when garbage goes in? And now all of the people that at one point were extolling the virtues of basically artificial intelligence, some of them, not all of them, but some of them are starting to question what happens when these things turn against us. Xenogenesis is only available on my website, stevequayle.com. But judging from the people around the world, what's fascinating to me, George, is that from Australia to New Zealand to Siberia, Moscow, I had a Russian interesting email that said, you know, we like your stuff over here, and I thought that was kind of fascinating. But what I'm saying is from Europe all over, people are starting to see. By the way, Xenogenesis is spelled X-E-N-O, and then the word genesis, and that literally means the introduction of a third set of chromosomes. So even these viruses that we're talking about, they come from Greek mythology, the chimera, half man, half animal. And the point being is now is that the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, is making super soldiers. And, you know, when we used to talk about that, people used to send me emails saying, you're insane, you're crazy. Huh. And now it's headlines. So there comes a time, a specific time, when that which was future-oriented becomes the now. And what I'm telling people, if that which was future is the now, what comes next? And Xenogenesis, in my opinion, and judging from the response I've gotten from others, is the best thing I've ever written. It talks about where we're headed, how we got to where we're going, and literally it's pretty frightening in the ramifications. And there are two chapters in there written by former CIA guys. One of them's on his deathbed, chapter 13 and chapter 1, written by one of the most brilliant men. I got to sit down with 6 hours with him a couple weeks ago. And I'll tell you what, point blank, it's a pretty amazing follow-through that when you deal with the whole human, the unique creation of mankind, you can understand there's a war. There's a war between, obviously, in the spiritual conflict realm, which just means God creating good, the devil evil. People say it's the other way around. But if you look at where we're at now as a nation, look at the foundations. And there's another Solomon statement. He said, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? And the answer is nothing.
As you look at prophecy, Stephen, are we in end times now?
Absolutely. And we're not, and somebody, you know, I think in the South they have a statement, fixing to enter into the end times. We're thrust into the end times because the four horsemen of the apocalypse, as you know, war and famine, and you can't get away from the coming famine. What do they say? Las Vegas is going to be out of water very soon.
And
California.
L.A. maybe too.
Yeah, yeah, and so we're in real trouble. And when the great quakes come, George, this is something you and I talked about again, you know, 10, 15 years ago, is that when the great quakes come, the aquifers, the Ogallala Aquifer and the others, this country, a lot of places that have even subterranean water are going to go dry. And so it's my contention, I said this the very first time I went on talk radio, that the greatest migration in the history of the United States will come as big cities run dry of water. I said it 23 years ago on record, and that people will be moving to any place they can move just for a simple glass of water. I heard you talking about Detroit. Water should be the most free and the most available substance in the world. Now you've got the head of Nestle's claiming it shouldn't. It should be privatized. Can you imagine when the Illuminati gets a hold of the water of the world, what you're going for? We're in big trouble.
East, Mike in Manhattan, welcome to the program. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George. Steve, great show. I have a few questions. One is are you aware of a 2007 Nobel Peace Prize that was given for a non-lethal weapon called a gay bomb? And two, my question is are you aware of the homosexual federalization of trucking throughout America? And three, do you believe, Steve, that God knows about waves and rays and lasers and beams and germs?
Wow, that's an interesting question. First of all, Steve, you have looked at weapons that they have targeted to certain people.
Yes, sir.
It's truly unbelievable at what they are trying to do. And I think what Mike was trying to get to was that they've developed weapons that can take out certain groups of people. Unbelievable.
Well, yeah, just like the frequencies. For instance, most people don't realize how many cell towers are across the country, but if they tune those antennas to a frequency less than, you know, the standard, whatever, 4.6 hertz, and they can put everyone to sleep. They tune it above that. They can agitate everything. So no on the first question, no on the second question. And I think the third question, he said, do I think God knows about all that stuff? Of course I think God knows all about it, because he says he taketh the wicked in their own devices. And I think the point being is that when I'm talking about God, I'm talking about someone who is above all, and the Bible says he's a spirit. He wasn't a man. He never was a man who became a God. He stands unique. And obviously, everybody wants to define God in an anthropomorphic sense of the word, and he's above it all. He's in it all, but revelation is given, and I think the knowledge of good and evil is, if people were to understand that everything the Defense Department does is designed to do one thing, and that's to basically fight a war and kill, okay? And if you understand that all the secret crap in the world, and it's crap, all of the expeditions and everything that's going on is to acquire ancient weaponry. And anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, if you just go and read Oppenheimer's quote when he developed the atom bomb, and if you go to the CERN, the ion collider, they're quoting, basically the wars of the ancients that were fought with nuclear weapons and vitrified deserts and everything. I mean, I know I'm trying to say a lot in a sentence, but the point is that We are at the point now where I believe Jesus said, if the days weren't shortened for the elect's sake, there'd be no flesh left alive. Because with all the weaponry and the sophisticated weaponry, and I will post on my website for everybody to see the story I'm talking about super potential weapons, George, it's beyond the imagination of even the most, I would say, sinister, wicked people to embrace the thought that they are being directed by very evil and what I consider fallen angels. And, I've talked on your show so much about it that even I put up on my website, and this is something cool, very cool, we need to just address real quick, that the Sumerian Table of Kings, they goes back 241,000 years, and they're dealing with kings that reigned for thousands of years. Well, how can that be? Well, obviously, they were not human beings, and then they switched to kings that were human beings. And so when we see all these Sumerian tablets with kings sitting on their throne, that if they stand up, they're, 10 times or 8 times the size of a human being, all this Genesis 6 stuff comes into play. And I tell people this, it is the entire blueprint for explaining what happened, how mankind got the intelligence he got, and why it's going to end prophetically the way that Jesus said it would. And I'm telling you, it doesn't matter. Everything is going on. Let's look at the war on
Christians.
Hold
on for a second, Stephen. At the break, we're going to come back with Final Call. Welcome back, Stephen Quayle with us. We'll wrap things up by taking final calls. Stephen, we got to fly you to Denver for a Beyond Belief taping in the future. Would you come?
Oh, I would. I've gone on a video. There was a time I was on it, but I would. And, hey, George, I'm getting emails. People need to know that my website is Steve Quayle, stevequalle.com. And I have a book section there they can just click on. And, again, my books, unless they're pirate versions, are only sold on my website. Somebody told me they show up on Amazon sometime. And if they want to call, we'll call them back. But, obviously, there's nobody there tonight. It's 1 o'clock or close to 1 o'clock here. 406-586-4842, 406-586-4842. And I do have 200 copies of Breed No Evil. That will not be reprinted. In my book that was out, for so long, we did a lot of interviews over the years on it. Genetic Armageddon has now been replaced by Xenogenesis, and those books are available, Xenogenesis and Breathe No Evil, on my website, Steve Quayle, QUAYLE.com, in the book section.
Super. Jonna in Alaska, welcome to the program, Jonna.
Turn it down. Hello?
Yep, you're up.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'll be really quick, and I'll take my answers off the air. I was just going to ask Mr. Quayle if he would give me a quick lesson on the difference between recession and inflation. He mentioned his hyperinflation. I'd kind of like to know how, when that jettisons and what's going to happen to the mortgage rates. And then he made a comment about this global chaos. And a lot of the things he's saying about, about the Bible and prophecy and things like that, I agree with. However, he made a comment that at that global chaos, the righteous can do nothing. And I know he must be familiar with Psalms chapter 2, where it says the kings of the earth take their stand and high officials gather together as one against the Lord and against his anointed one. And then in 8 and 9, it says that you will break them with an iron scepter, meaning the nations, and you will smash them like a piece of pottery. So, and then we can come down to the last verse, 12. It says, honor the Son of God, or he will become indignant, and you will perish from the way. Happy are all those taking refuge in him.
All right, let's not get into all the verses here, because Stephen knows it like the back of his hand. But, Stephen, give us a little overview.
Well, first of all, I agree with her. What I'm saying is what King Solomon said. If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? People are frustrated because they feel they cannot do anything. But let's get to the inflation aspect of it. Most people are experiencing inflation right now. I can't speak for Alaska. But when you're paying at 1 week $4.95 for a pound of bacon, and it goes to $9.98. That's real inflation. John Williams of Shadow Stats does a great job in showing what the real rates of inflation are. And the simple way to say it, as you increase the money supply almost ad infinitum to infinity, it takes more dollars to buy less goods. And a good example of that is Zimbabwe. When Zimbabwe was Rhodesia, 1 shilling bought an egg. Now it's, I think, 1 billion shillings for an egg. The point being is that what China and Russia are going to do, and George, I said this 20 years ago, they're going to back their currency with a basket of commodities. And even though the West, kind of under the United States, Canada, and Mexico, has a plan for the Amero and all this stuff, Russia and China will strike at the point that they feel it's to their benefit. And I'm telling everybody that, and I want to just deal with the second psalm. That's exactly what we're dealing with, because we will not have this man rule over us. That's Jesus. If you look at the war throughout the world on Christians are being slaughtered, and there's no word from the administration, you know, about that. And, I mean, it's a tragedy, and I don't recommend anybody looks at it, but when you see Christian pastors in Nigeria and other places with their throats being slit, and you know that, you know, children are being slaughtered, I mean, the word slaughter has lost its meaning. So what I'm saying is this, is that Jesus said the Christians are the salt of the earth. They better stand up, speak up, and not be denying the Lord Jesus, because if they don't, they're going to be steamrolled. And Jesus said, it's henceforth good for nothing but be trodden under the foot of man. In other words, they're going to succumb because they wouldn't stand up and take their authority that he's given them.
All right, let's go to Edward in Wyckoff, New Jersey. Thanks for calling, Edward. Go ahead.
Speaking of prophecy, you might do well to read Deuteronomy 28. This concerns immigration, which you mentioned a little while ago, and your support of it. Deuteronomy 28:43, the alien who is among you will mount above you higher and higher, and you will come down lower and lower. He will lend to you, and you will not lend to him. He will be the head, and you will be the tail. That's exactly what has happened in America, especially in the last 120 years. The population of America and during the American Revolution 240 years ago was 3 million. It is now 100 times that. The population in 1914, 100 years ago, was slightly less than 100 million. It is now tripled. At that rate of increase, it will be 1 billion in another 100 years. This is now the third most overpopulated country in the world after India and China. That rate of increase is unsustainable. And the increase has not come from the natural indigenous population from England, Germany, Holland, and Scandinavia. It has come from all of the countries of the world who have used this territory as a fragmented colony. That is the truth about immigration today and why it needs to stop.
Well, I'm not sure it's going to stop, though, Stephen.
I agree with Deuteronomy. As a matter of fact, caller, I quote that all the time, and that's what we're seeing. If we understood that China and the Middle East owns almost, let's say, 90% of our debt, and Europe owns another 10%, the point is that strangers from without will possess us from within. Possess literally means to own, and we're the tail now, and we're contemptuous. And again, the idea of you can breed an indigenous population out of existence. That's where I made a statement, George, kind of a little mnemonic or a little statement. Rape, pillage, and plunder, the United States is going under. And the thing is, and now I can say has gone under, because if I were to say define the United States, this is my answer. The point is, it is nowhere near what it was. We can all remember when we had value. We can all remember when we saw the flag, but the contempt that the administration and those in Washington, including both sides of the equation, Republicans and Democrats, have for this country, our founding fathers, and we have no due process. We are a subjugated nation, and I'm on record as stating a number of years ago that the United States will be destroyed. It's not because I'm negative. It's because I know what the Russian war plans are. I read them. I know what the Chinese war plans are. I read them. And the point is we've got foreign military here to ready to enforce exactly the foreign governments that own us. They're going to enforce their legal rights.
Stephen, time for a few more calls here. Let's go west. Henry is in Top Hat, Washington. Go ahead, Henry. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Hi, Mr. Quayle.
Hi.
Mr. Quayle, you are so right on point. I don't know, 5-6 years ago people said I was crazy for talking like this. But I'd just like to ask a quick question off a little bit on back to the chemicals. Do you think that it's possible that since you can track the Bilderbergs back about at least 500 years or so, do you think they possibly, the elite with possibly, maybe let's just say alien technology, had wiped out with the Black Plague? And let me just make one comment for these people. I'm a Christian, but when you're talking about Scripture, you know, a lot of people are just in denial. The Bible says in Revelation that in these times, in these end times, many men's hearts will fail them, and right will be wrong, and wrong will be right. And we see that right now. I'll take my answer off the air, and you guys are awesome. Great show, George. Great show.
It is, indeed is, because Steve Quayle is spot on. Stephen, go ahead.
Well, Jeremiah the prophet, and I agree with the caller, said, "Woe unto them who call evil good and good evil." It is so tragic that values no longer exist. And I would say this, human life in my eyes is precious. And whether people want to call me crazy or whatever, all I'm saying is I'm trying to stop the senseless bloodletting and the killing. Now, do I believe I can do that? No. But can I do it maybe to one or two or three people? Yeah. Maybe that's 3,000. The numbers are known only to God. But we are at a point now, George, where everything, and this is a great statement, I think, because it represents my years on talk radio with you, is the fact that everything that we've talked about, and I'm in print, so it's not Johnny come lately, no one else talked about the ruble and the yuan being back with gold 20 years ago, 15 years ago, or 10 years ago. But because, quote, I'm controversial, some people want to, you know, put whatever labels on me. But the thing is I would just quote Jesus. Look, if you don't believe me for what I say, look around you and see where you're at. Look at your children who have student loans that are now approaching $1 trillion. How are they going to pay them back when there are no jobs? Because what the caller said, the caller that talking about the population increase, all the jobs that were middle class and middle classes destroyed. That's why all the stores are closing. That's why you hear the price of food ballooning. And unfortunately, you've got a situation designed where you have the haves versus the have-nots. And I personally believe that we are going to see the most radical upheaval in the United States because of the communists, I'll use that word, want it that way, because the foundation of what you've seen happening for the last 6 years is based on that principle. And so when you got some guy back in the days of the Weather Underground saying 30 million people have to die and 66 million have to be put, notice the number, have to be put into prison camps to be re-educated, and now if you take it forward, those numbers just about double, I'd say that should make most people nervous. But hey, the Titanic's going down. They're turning in the request to the conductor to play their favorite tune as they waltz into the Atlantic with martinis in their hand. Huh. And that's the best thing I can say. That's where America is today, in denial. And basically, I've got mine. Who cares about you? But it's time to care about everybody. And that's why I do what I do.
Stephen, I was in the Las Vegas area this weekend at the International Remote Viewing Conference. And afterward, you know, I ran into people from China, from Russia, and the bottom line is these people just want to enjoy their lives. They don't want wars. They don't want to fight. They don't want anything bad for their kids. We're all the same. It's the politicians who are screwing up this planet.
Absolutely. And you know why? Because they're control freaks, okay? Most people, I don't care what nation of the world, they just want to be left alone. But isn't it interesting? The number one, your ad, or whoever the speaker was that plays, you know, for the breaks,
mm-hmm.
it's all about control.
Yep.
It has always been about control, and there are some people who are absolutely control freaks. And in essence, when you hear that the billionaires of the world, and remember, what was it, Prince Philip said he wanted to come back as a virus and wipe out the population. Well, that's a little bit, not loving and kind, but that's the attitude. You know, when we're considered a virus, and then they release viruses on us, George, I think people had better wise up quickly. And again, I would say prepare, and that means you've got to have food and water, that you don't have to go to a grocery store in the middle of a panic, because the day that the dollar starts to die, and it'll start in Japan, it'll spread to the Far East, then it'll spread, you know, it'll start in the Far East, spread to the Middle East, spread to Europe, spread to us. It's going to happen so fast that I don't think people will be able to relate in real time until about a day or two after, and then if should we face an EMP, which is the most likely initial strike, then all bets are off.
Well, they sure are. Michael, Atlanta, Georgia, first-time caller. Michael, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Great show. George, to you and everybody involved with Coast to Coast, thank you for keeping the dialogue
open. You got it, Michael. Thank you.
Stephen, a whirlwind of information. I was hoping to add to it. There's a little town in North Carolina, or actually a little valley in North Carolina comprising of two towns that have been, the talk of the town is chemtrails for over a decade. Well, this past June 2nd through 16th, the DOD, I'm assuming the goodness of their heart, brought in over 100 physicians and support staff to offer free medical services. And then I also heard that they were also bringing veterinarians. And one of my thoughts was that they were trying to collect a baseline. And I was wondering if you had ever heard of anything like that or what you thought about that. And then to make a quick left turn to the end times, just with everything happening, there are people that believe that this Pope is the one that will be here for the end times. Isn't, despite who controls the money and everything else, isn't this all in the long run a good thing? And it's happening the way it's supposed to?
Well, it's like this, okay? It's like it's going to happen. No one can stop it. And if you're saying that, you know, it's fulfilling prophecy, yes, it's fulfilling prophecy. But remember, in the biblical view, people are still given free will. And God never forces anyone to believe in him or to accept Jesus. But the point is, a war is on Jesus. You know this, when you can discuss anything in the world and everything in the world but the name of Jesus, why is that name hated? And I'll tell you why that name is hated, because the Bible specifically says that the Battle of Armageddon is literally where the kings of the earth and their fallen angel cohorts are going to make war against God and his people. They're not going to win, but they're going to, in the meantime, take a toll. And that's why, I'm sorry, but the slaughter that I've warned about is starting worldwide. And I said the persecution would come, and people just blew it off. They'll blow it off only until it's at their doorstep. And as a pastor friend of mine, David Langford, said, you don't have to go looking for trouble. Trouble's coming looking for you.
I'm amazed, Stephen, how wars are done in the name of religion. Unbelievable.
Absolutely, and I'm categorically against that. And here's the thing. I think the caller was inferring, and if I'm misunderstanding, I don't, you know, please correct me, caller. But the point is, it's all happening. It's a good thing. But how people face the worst time in history. Jesus said there was never a time like it, nor would be again. And except those days be shortened, there'd be no flesh left alive. That's why I wrote Xenogenesis, no flesh left alive. And turning men into monsters, when you're giving them the powers of animals, and when you're creating the very mythological creatures and turning them loose on basically just good people trying to make a living, you know, it's one thing to try and grow your lunch. It's another thing for you becoming lunch, and it goes to serving mankind, like George and I have talked about, our favorite Twilight Zone episode. I'm afraid that I believe that America, you know, people around the world should be growing their foodstuffs, not becoming them for malevolent creatures from hell.
Steve, minute to go. Please give out your website again.
Yes, my website is stevequayle.com, Q-U-A-Y-L-E.com. Probably the most important thing on my website are the alerts. That's where I post what's going around. My book section, you just go on books. You can order online. For those of you that can't order online, you want it, I'll go with my telephone number, 406-586-4842. I have an answering machine, 406-586-4842. And my book, Xenogenesis, and the last 200 copies of Breathe No Evil. Genetic Armageddon won't be reprinted because I've replaced it with something newer, and it's called Xenogenesis. Xenogenesis is blowing people's minds around the world, and it's having a major, major effect on how they see history in the making and showing people what your future is. It's not like, George, these guys don't tell you what's coming. They tell you, and then they marvel amongst themselves at how stupid we are that we don't believe it.
That's right.
I, for one, believe it.
Right under our noses. Stephen, take care of yourself. We'll see you soon, okay?
Thank you so much, George. Bye-bye.
Stephen Quayle, up next, we talk about creation, how science is reinventing life itself. Don't touch your dial. I'll be right back.
Okay, Moz, we're back. that was some very, very interesting information. And the phone lines are open. The number to dial into this broadcast is 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. Don't hesitate to raise your hand if you got some comments in regards to what you heard. if you need some information on how best to prepare, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line so you can get in. If you got anything involving what you heard tonight, raise your hand. We have one caller with his hand raised. I'm going to open up the line to see what he has to say about what we are dealing with here this evening. Eric Cole, 412. Tell me who you are. 412, you're on the air.
Hi, Brother Tarkus, Lisa.
Hey, Lisa.
How you doing?
Fine.
Good. I'm listening to what the guy was saying, and I have to admit, you know, the quotes from Jesus is Jesus, it's a kind of a turnoff, but what I have to remember, and I think is important for many of us to remember, is the Bible is just stories from Africa that they reprinted in Jewish form. And that went the saying, if you don't know your history, you repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
We can bypass what these folks are saying because he put a Jesus title on it, but that would be a big disservice. It's absolutely frightening to think that people in power can do the things that they're doing. And the thoughts that came to my head is, if they do it to their own people, people of color in particular, you know, the so-called black man is in deeper trouble because they have no value for our lives. They have more value on an animal than they do our own lives. And so it's just, sometimes it's just amazing to hear some of the stuff that they're capable of, the destruction and just, like he said, the slaughter of people and kids. And it's sad. And if I could say one thing, I would tell every parent that has a child, stop getting your kids immunized. It's just poison put in their bodies. Got to stop it. And you can do it legally.
Well, I have to agree with that. Now, you were a teacher in these schools. What did you run into as far as immunization was concerned? What kind of plan? Who was trying to? Go
who
ahead.
Was trying to? No, I was waiting for your question. Finish. I'm sorry. Who was trying to?
Were they trying to force that on the children?
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't have the exemption letter, if your children aren't up to date with their shots, they cannot come to school. Cannot come to school. You can get the exemption letter. They have no choice but to let your child in school. My kids, when I read vaccines are dangerous, my son was 18 months, and I think my daughter was maybe 8 months. They have not had shots since. I stopped it. I got the exemption letter from a bay here in Pittsburgh, and even when my daughter went to college, they told her she needed some shots. I told her, tell them it's against your religious beliefs and you have an exemption letter. They have not bothered her.
Okay. So now.
Yeah, you can do that. Mm-hmm.
What is in this vaccine that they would put in the children? And the children
all
that did take it.
All types of stuff. It's all types of stuff. Chemicals, ammonia. Stuff they make it put in cigarettes. There's a guy here. It's a Caucasian, however, but he's into holistic, you know, healing, and he has a show every Saturday. And the first thing he says is, stop getting immunizations for your children. That's the first thing he says on his show every Saturday.
Say it again.
When he opens up his show, the first thing he says on his show is stop getting immunizations for your children. It's nothing but a tube full of poison. This is a Caucasian saying this.
So once a child gets this stuff in their body, it makes them sick, no doubt. But is it? Are they able to during their lifetime to rid themselves of it naturally? Or are they going to have to try to get some type of help? How does that work?
Tahaka, you know what? I'm not a doctor, but I would have to say, because they require you to get them so often, how could you get it out of your system? You know what I mean? You have to, a 6-month-old has to have a certain amount of shots. A 12-month-old has to have a certain amount of shots. An 18-month-old has to have a certain amount of shots. You get to kindergarten, you have to have a certain amount of shots. First grade, certain amount of shots. Now they're telling our young girls to get the HPV to prevent cervical cancer. That's all that stuff is going to cause for them. Yeah, and we're running. Our children, our parents are running to get this stuff. They have birth control that releases stuff into your body for 30 days. They shoot it in your arm, and it releases different things in your body for 30 days.
And this is supposed to stop you from getting pregnant, but
But what else is it doing to you? Right. What else is it doing to you? Causing blood clots, fibroids, all types of stuff. And we just, you know, it's interesting because working around kids, you know, and they're predominantly black. We talk, and I work around teenagers, high school kids, and so they'll say, "Oh, I'm going to get me a pork chop." I say, "Well, you know, I don't eat meat." "Oh, what's wrong with you? You Muslim?" You know, you got to be some type of something in order to be a little bit different. Where'd you grow up? You ain't grew up in the hood, did you? I mean, and I'm not putting our people down. It's just they don't know that they don't know. But we're so conditioned, Taharka, to believe the white man and or the Caucasian. And even when someone that doesn't look like him tells them something different, they don't believe it. They don't believe it. They'll go right to him and say, "Is this true?" And they'll say, "Yeah." Oh, okay, Ms. Parker was right. Yeah. But you tell somebody you don't eat meat, you drink vegetable juice, this and that, and they just look at you like, "What is wrong with you?"
You know, I had a guy told me one time, he said, because when I was working, I was juicing every day, and that was all I was doing, just juicing, nothing but juicing. And somebody told this guy on the job what I was doing. And this guy, you know, I'm sitting outside. He rushed outside. He said, "You don't eat no meat." I said, "Well, no, I don't eat any food that's been cooked at all, including meat." He said, "Man, you better." And I've been doing this for well over 2 years. He said, "Man, you better hurry up and eat some meat before it's too late." I said, "Wow." I said, "Well, brother, I was suspect." After 2 years of doing this, it would have been too late a long time ago. What are you talking about?
it's amazing. You have to be from planet Mars in order to fit into some paradigms when you do things differently, when you learn about eating well and, you know, just being on the right track. And it's just constant bombardment with ice cream on TV and hoagies and sandwiches. It's constant. And our kids in the school that I work at, their breakfast was hot Cheetos and Faygo Pop.
Wow.
That's what they would eat for breakfast. Hot Cheetos, hot everything. I said, by the time you guys are 30, you will not have a lining in your stomach.
Wow. I got another caller with his hand raised up. Hold on, I'm going to open up this line. Area code 904, are you with us? 904.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Taharka?
Hey, you're fine, man. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, this is Corey from the 904 Jacksonville, Florida area.
Okay, Corey.
I came in late, but I got the gist of it just from the last part of that Coast to Coast AM show that you had just played. And I read a book called E Pluribus Unum, New World Order, back in the day. And just from what the sister just was talking about, it had all that in there. And a guy named Gallo, who they said created AIDS, had his hand in there, or at least the test that the AIDS were having antibodies for AIDS, the test, and then how all that came about. He they were talking about how they would in the future, you know, give you these colorful commercials and have people, you know, they basically put you to sleep watching these commercials, and then they give you all these all the side effects. And they talk about death and all that, and what you know what can occur from taking these medications, and just look right past that, and it's incredible. It is just absolutely incredible. Also read Bill Cooper's book, Behold a Pale Horse.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a revelation within itself, and they took that cat out. Eagle County, Arizona, the sheriff came through and killed him after he was on Coast to Coast and mentioned something about the oncoming false flag 9/11 stuff. He actually mentioned that. And they took them straight on out, but you know that that's nothing. They do it all the time, you know. But
I like to recommend a couple of other books that y'all need to read. Also, one is called "None Dare Call It Conspiracy," and the other is called "The Rockefeller File." Those are two very, very powerful books. Hold on, we have another caller with his hand raised.
All right, sir.
Area code 214. Come on in. You're on the
Islam.
Air. 214.
Islam. Ass face. You hear me?
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, this is Ash Bay from the Republic of Texas. I kind of wanted to touch bases on far as with vaccinations. And if you guys want to know the actual ingredients in every single vaccination, there's a doctor who recently got her license taken away because she was basically when she found out the actual ingredients that they was putting in the vaccines, she started educating the patients and the government shut her down and they took her license and they threatened to take her kids. But the website is Dr. Carley, CARELY.com, DrCarley.com. And every vaccine that your child gets, she gives you the ingredients. Perfect. I'll give you one good example. Abortions are one of the reasons abortions are allowed in this country because they take the cells from the fetus and part of that is put in the vaccine. Monkey cells from kidneys from monkeys and aluminum, lead, all sorts of chemicals are put in. If you go onto a website, she gives you every single, mercury, exactly, aluminum. The list just goes on and on. And I know the question was, can we counteract the vaccine? Well, yes, but most of our kids is eating chicken and McDonald's and heart attack in the box, and the list goes on. We can't get rid of what the vaccine is doing to us if we continue to, eat dead food. I ask people all the time, if you're alive, why would you eat dead food? You are what you eat, so all you eating is dead food. You speeding up the process. So
that's right.
Our kids had our parents had to be educated on the type of foods that we need to give our children, or else the worst is yet to come. But I encourage everybody. The lady is a European, but all Europeans ain't bad. Some of those people are, they're here to help us, just like the Prophet Noble Drew Ali stated. But the site is very powerful, and she'll tell you every ingredient that's in there, and it's just ridiculous of what they're putting in our children. So I encourage people to, you know, get the exemption forms and get the juicing up and start growing your own vegetables, because that's the only way out.
Yes, sir. That's going to be the only way we survive. Now, the website, again, is Dr. Corley, C-O-R-L-E-Y, Dr. C-A-R-L-E-Y? Okay, C-A-R-L-E-Y.com, mm-hmm. Dr. Corley. Okay, you're absolutely correct. In order for us to survive this thing, we're going to have to grow something, even if we have to put the pots in the garage and you ain't got but six plants. But you're going to have to do something in order to put some nutrition in your body. And one of the at the outset of the broadcast, we talked about 25 things to do that we for preparation. And one of the most important things they said was stock up on nutritional supplements. And a lot of us are going to be forced in a position to just out of hunger to have something in our stomach that has absolutely no nutrition in it. But if we have something that we can put with that, some type of supplement that we can put with that, that will give us a little bit more energy and life so that we can do and protect. Because, you know, if you ain't got no strength, you can't fight off an attacker. When people get hungry, they're willing to do anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, chaos and panic and all of that ensues. Y'all hold on, I got another caller here. 972, come on in.
Hey, Brother Tyka, this is Sharon.
Hey, Sharon, well, what you think about all this?
Wow, it's a lot of information, and I know it's true, but it's I wonder how your switchboard is lit up tonight. I mean, what are most of our brothers and sisters doing right now? They're out there celebrating the 4th of July.
when is that? Is that tomorrow, right?
They started today. You know today is Friday. I was coming to work, and I have just passed by. They lined all up on the streets. They got the grills out. Yeah, they got the red, white, and blue flags just flying. They dressed all up in red, white, and blue. And they just sitting out there among them folks like they celebrating death. What kind of doggone independence did we get from the 4th of July?
Mm-hmm.
None.
Well,
that is
we
not
got
our holiday.
We got some smart people now. We got some smart people that's on this call tonight, because this switchboard is all the way up to the top with people who actually have a brain. And they are with us here tonight. If they ain't out there stuck on the 4th of July, dealing with celebrating a custom and a culture that had absolutely nothing to do with them. And so these people are here getting some real knowledge.
Right. Well, you're putting out some heavy information today, and I like the 25 things. I wrote it down. And one thing on that that she mentioned that I hadn't thought of was vitamins. Now, what type of vitamins do you think we need to be storing up?
Well, one thing that we got to understand is we cannot upgrade vitamins. Vitamins cannot be upgraded. And what I recommend is that we deal with supplements. You have nutritional supplements that you can take. There's a company that has some of the most excellent supplements out. It's called Purity Products. I listen to them early in the morning. And they have some very good stuff. I have taken some of their products, doing my workout and stuff, the joint compound, little capsules, and they gave my joints good cushion. I said, well, this is good stuff. And so the food that we have that we're getting out the grocery store, because most of us are not growing our own, that is an excellent thing that we can put together to use. You can get some of those products. They have different kinds for different things. They got your energy products. They got your krill oil, which I take that every day. And matter of fact, I think that based on what we eating on a regular basis, of course, none of it has any nutrition in it. So we want to
stock up on that. The company is called Purity Products, and it comes on right after Coast to Coast AM in the morning, and they'll run two commercials, last about an hour, and they're having the products. You can order them. You get your two free bottles of whatever it is you want for free. You only have to pay is $4.95 for shipping, and then they will bill you later by sending you three bottles of each one you got, and then they'll charge you. So you can contact the company and say, well, hold off on the charging me. Let me use this for about 30 days or so, and then I'll determine whether I want to actually get the big order. So they're very good. They work very good. They have plenty of energy, and these are food supplements. But as far as vitamins is concerned, cannot upgrade vitamins, okay? That just can't be getting, you know, vitamins. They have all these different types of vitamins, and they talk about this, that, and the other. But you can't upgrade vitamins. Vitamins are vitamins, and one-a-day vitamins, they ain't no better than nothing else when it comes to that. So does anybody else have another question? What about this economic collapse thing now?
Islam.
What y'all think about that?
Islam.
Come on.
Oh, this Ash Bay. I just want to be real quick with this. If the vitamin is not extracted from a fruit or vegetable and you can get it in pill form like at a health food store, then that's the proper mm-hmm. vitamins to get, because all these little, you go to Walmart and see vitamin C, that's that's genetically modified vitamin C. It's not real vitamin C. So I would encourage people to go to like to the health food store and get the mm-hmm. actual vitamins that's extracted from the from the actual vegetable or the fruit, because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you don't eat meat, so you lacking protein. No, fruit has more protein than an actual dead animal. You know what I'm saying? So I would suggest stay out of Walmart to get vitamins. Go to, like, your mom and pop's health food stores and get, like, vitamins that's extracted from fruits and vegetables itself, because that's where the real vitamins come from. It comes from the ground. It don't come from a laboratory. And most of those vitamins in Walmart and Walgreens, those come from a laboratory. But if you get an actual vitamin that's extracted from a vegetable fruit, that comes from the earth. Islam.
Okay, somebody got a lot of background noise in there. Y'all stop sweeping.
Hey, I like, am I on?
Yeah, we listen. Come on.
Yeah, I like to encourage the brothers and sisters to check into these Army surplus stores, you know, the brothers and sisters who are on the ready. They have classes that they'll give, you know, and a lot of us don't know because we don't frequent, you know, those places, and those survival classes. And I've attended one, and it's very well worth it. You can also get books on, you know, living out, you know, in the wilderness, and also you can get books on plants, you know, different types of plants, because in a time of a crisis, you will be able to, you know what not to eat, because there's certain plants that look like they are edible, but you got to be able to distinguish it. And I saw a show on HBO where a Caucasian, he went out in the wilderness, you know, he was testing it out, and he ended up eating the wrong thing, and he was found however many months later on a bus that he had domiciled in. But you got to be prepared, you know, and it's well worth it. Now, me being ex-military, you know, I can attest to the validity of it. So if any brothers and sisters, you know, I mean, don't be afraid. Just be afraid. Be prepared. That's all I got to say. Islam.
Now, I have a very extensive survival course. And this thing here, we have the military experts. We have people who have actually been in natural disasters and economic collapse systems, and they will show you and tell you how and what they've done to survive in a real-life scenario. And we have these packages over at newdebtelimination.com. the indoor-outdoor survival system, the natural survival system, all this comes with extensive videos. A person can get this stuff and right there in your home. It can show you how to grow your own food in your garage, in your house, in a room, how to actually survive out in the wilderness, how to deal with a riot situation, what type of weapons to have, how to make your own ammunition, how to remake ammunition from used ammunition that you've already used. And all of this stuff is included in these packages, very, very extensive packages. And I got a feeling that a lot of people are going to need this stuff in the near future. So I want to make sure that you all have this. I got a little bit more information that I'm going to bring out, and I want y'all to sit tight for a minute so that we can check this stuff here out, because this is very, very informative information. This is stuff that we definitely need to check out.
And we take up a question that is being discussed in the wake of the hurricane. Should cities and states start making bigger changes to prepare for the consequences of natural disasters and severe weather? Ray Suarez has the story as part of our ongoing series on coping with climate change.
A hurricane in the final days of October, fed by warm ocean water, slams the eastern seaboard. It's a reminder of how often extreme weather events have been in the news. Superstorm Sandy battered the coastline, and a record 14-foot storm surge brought New York City to a standstill, leaving the city with potentially staggering repair costs. All this came just months after the summer heat wave caused harsh droughts throughout the Midwest, and wildfires engulfed entire swaths of Colorado. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the last year, from June of 2011 to July of 2012, was the nation's warmest year since record-keeping began in 1895. And it's just over a year ago that Hurricane Irene caused record flooding in the Northeast. But with Sandy came new records, and according to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, more pressure for governments to act.
I joke, every 2 years we have a 100-year flood. The frequency is way up. It is not prudent to sit here, I believe, at this point and say, well, it's not going to happen again. But once you have that recognition, then what are you doing about it? And what design changes, what construction changes are you making to deal with it?
As New York struggles to recover from Sandy, Cuomo looked to the long term, calling for a fundamental rethinking of our built environment.
Be careful, because you want to have some grease in it.
One key issue, how to protect the New York City subway system, which experienced the worst damage in its 108-year history. Many stations remain submerged under several feet of water, even as limited operations are expected to resume tomorrow. But infrastructure renovations are not always a clear fix. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who's taken a number of steps to make New York a greener city, has not yet proposed a major infrastructure change that might deal with rising water levels, but he warned again today that citizens and policymakers need to take climate change predictions seriously.
It's not the sort of thing that you can ever say for sure, but the consequences of making a mistake in one direction are pretty severe. And I think what we have to do is learn from this and protect our infrastructure to the extent possible. The bottom line is we've lost some people. We have to make sure we help their families and pray for them. We at the same time have to make sure that we go forward here and keep the city going.
Part of the growing challenge, New York's coastal waters are expected to rise as much as 2 feet by the middle of the century. In 2010, outgoing Governor David Paterson issued a report on the state's rising sea levels. He recommended building structural barriers and moving population centers away from the coast. Some experts say the cost of protecting New York City against floods could run as high as $10 billion.
For a look at the costs and choices U.S. communities are facing, we turn to Joseph Rome, editor of the blog Climate Progress and a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, a liberal policy group. He's also the author of Hell and High Water. and Kenneth Green, a resident scholar on energy and the environment at the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative think tank. And gentlemen, we heard Mayor Bloomberg, Governor Cuomo sort of wrestling out loud with making some of these choices. Knowing what we know, does Philadelphia, does Boston, does New York have to use a changed municipal math to run its daily affairs because of threats of these kinds of things? Joe Rome?
Well, I think as Governor Cuomo said, it's a new normal, but we have old infrastructure. I think if you listen to climate scientists, if we had listened to climate scientists who had warned that New York City could flood like this, that storm surges were going to increase as the sea levels rose because of global warming and because of more intense storms, we might have prevented it. Now I think we need to listen to climate scientists who are warning that sea levels could rise 2 feet, as you heard, by the middle of the century, but 3, 4, 5, and 6 feet by the end of the century. So our choices are twofold. We should reduce greenhouse gas emissions so that we're on the low end of future warming estimates. And secondly, we got to start preparing for the storms that we are stuck with, like Hurricane Sandy.
Governor Cuomo, Ken Green used the word prudence. What is prudent at this point?
Well, that's the question, and I agree. We have a lot of infrastructure problems in the country. Many of our infrastructure problems are actually caused by bad policy, building infrastructure in places without market signals to say how valuable they are, and without insurance regimes in place to make sure that they're maintained and that they're built to a proper level of safety. And as Governor Cuomo said, you know, the question is, okay, we agree something needs to be done, but what do you do about it? So this is where I will differ with Joe, which is he wants to focus on greenhouse gas emission reductions and spending our money in that direction. I want to focus on ways we build resilience in our cities. I want to find ways where we have use markets and use market-like structures to make sure that people aren't putting themselves in harm's way because they know they get a free rebuild, that they're not overbuilding infrastructure in dangerous or sensitive areas because it serves a rich community that actually has connections in city
hall. Well, let me stop you there, because whenever you say build more resiliency, obviously there's a laundry list of choices there. You could make it absolutely impermeable and bulletproof, or just a little safer than it is today, and the cost is going to vary a great deal.
Oh, that's right. We will never have a risk-free world. And, in fact, you wouldn't want one, because with risk comes learning. But you're not going to build, for instance, your wastewater treatment plant for a 100-year storm surge. Most of the rest of the time it would be operating at horrible levels of inefficiency if you overbuilt something that way. So when I say resilience, it doesn't mean that we avoid all harm. Resilience means you bounce back efficiently and effectively. And that's where we need to focus our efforts, is on building resilience, not resistance.
Well, Joseph Rome, you began the conversation by saying, had we listened to earlier projections, we'd be in better shape. If municipal leaders had gone to the people of that region and said, we got to get ready. A storm is coming someday. It's going to cost X number of dollars to build in protections to the New York City subway system. Would you have been able to raise that money? Are people ready to hear that kind of argument? Or is it now going to be crisis financing as you try to clean up a very badly damaged system?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Ray. I mean, look, people warned at Katrina that New Orleans needed to be able to withstand a Category 5. They didn't design the levees to withstand it, and we see what happened. Now we see the same thing with Sandy. I think the hope has to be that Sandy isn't short for Cassandra and that it's another warning that we ignore. Absolutely. People now have seen that you can, in fact, have the worst-case scenario, which was a flooding of the lower Manhattan. And I think any city along the eastern seaboard has to ask themselves, what would happen if Hurricane Sandy hit us?
Well, how do we price risk, then, into the decisions we make, both publicly and privately? Should there be places in New Jersey, in New York, where insurance companies say, we don't want to pay for you to rebuild right there, where the cost of doing so becomes higher and maybe prohibitive for some people?
There probably should be, yes, because the alternative is we keep enticing people to place more and more of their value, more and more of their wealth in fragile ecosystems or fragile areas of the environment if we don't give them the proper price signal on risk. So somehow we have to find a way to get the state out of being the insurer of last resort and get some sort of a more functioning or imitation of a functioning insurance market that prices risk appropriately.
So who has to be the bad guy then? Is it private business solely, or does government have a hand in saying to people and creating common wisdom on this kind of thing, we just can't live in the way that we've always lived because the environment's going to be different?
Well, I think there's no question it's going to have to be both. I mean, it's ultimately the private sector does most of the construction and rebuilding. But, you know, the government has to be able to come in and tell people, you know, you can't live in a once-in-a-hundred-year floodplain because it's no longer once-in-a-hundred-year. Now it's once in every 10 years. And by the way, I think that's a very good argument for why we have to reduce carbon pollution, because I can't tell you where the next superstorm will hit. I just know that you're going to get another 100-year flood somewhere, and the more that we pollute, the more heat-trapping gases we put in the atmosphere, the more places are going to experience this disaster, and I agree with Ken completely. You can't design every single city and every single system for the once-in-a-thousand-year storm, so let's not wait by doing nothing on greenhouse gas pollution so that every place experiences that thousand-year storm sooner or later. We need to minimize the number of extreme weather events while we're designing resilience into the systems we have today.
Politicians hate to approach people with a can't-do proposition. Is that why we haven't heard that much about climate change and the consequences and the need for choices in this latest presidential campaign?
I don't think so. I think you're seeing a poll-driven result. That is, if you look at the polls of public opinion survey where people are asked what is of most concern to them, the environment has never ranked particularly highly compared to the economy and opportunities in education and self-defense and police crime and things like that. But that's been declining over time. And in fact, if you unpack the environment section of what people care about, climate tends to rank virtually dead last. People are more concerned with their local environment, air pollution, water pollution, and things like that, which is why we've seen these new poll-tested terms like carbon pollution. CO2 is the thing I'm exhaling at you right now, right? We breathe out carbon dioxide. So this is why we're seeing these new terms, green energy, instead of talking about climate change, is because the polls show the people are skeptical and dubious of those kind of motivations. You know, they believe it's been overblown, and it turns people off.
Joseph Rome, why haven't we heard more about this topic during the national campaign?
Well, of course, Mitt Romney gets a lot of money from fossil fuel interests, so that's one reason he even opposes a clean energy tax credit for wind. Obama, I think, is just misreading the polls entirely. The latest polling shows that I think Ken is right. It's when global warming becomes local that the public becomes concerned about it, and that's why the polls in the last 2 years have shown the public is increasingly concerned. And this is particularly true of independent voters also. They are very concerned about their local pollution, but also the extreme weather that they've been seeing. I mean, who could miss, you know, $14 billion extreme weather disasters in this country last year and over seven this year? It's just, you know, everyone sees the weather's going crazy and it's affecting them. It's not going to be affecting a distant people in a distant land a distant time from now. It's happening here now.
Joseph Rome, Kenneth Green, gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've rounded up all.
The dollar collapse will be the single largest event in human history. This will be the first event that will touch every single living person in the world. All human activity is controlled by money. Our wealth, our work, our food, our government, even our relationships are affected by money. No money in human history has had as much reach in both breadth and depth as the dollar. It is the de facto world currency. All other currency collapses will pale in comparison to this big one. All other currency crises have been regional, and there have always been other currencies for people to grasp onto. This collapse will be global, and it will bring down not only the dollar, but all other fiat currencies, as they are fundamentally no different. The collapse of currencies will lead to the collapse of all paper assets. The repercussions to this will have incredible results worldwide. The dollar is the world's reserve currency. It supports the global economy in setting foreign trade, most importantly, the petrodollar trade. This fuels our corporate vampires that acquires and harvests the wealth of the world. The corporate powers suppress real assets like natural resources and labor to provide themselves massive profits. The fascist statists
collectivist model provides the money into the economy to fund an ever-increasing federal government. That government then grows larger and larger, enriching its minions with jobs to control their fellow citizens. Finally, to come full circle, the government then controls other nations through the military-industrial complex. This cycle will be cut when the mathematically and inevitable collapse of the dollar occurs. In order for our debt-based money to function, we must increase the debt every year in excess of the debt and interest accrued the year before, or we will enter a deflationary debt spiral. When debt is created, money is created. When the debt is paid off, money is destroyed. There is never enough to pay off the debt because there would be not $1 in existence. We are at a point where we either default on the debt, willingly or unwillingly, or create more money or debt to keep the cycle moving. The problem is, if you understand anything about compounding interest, we are reaching the hockey stick moment, where the more debt that is incurred, the less effective it is, and this leads us to hyperinflation. There are only two actors needed for this hyperinflation: the lender of last resort, or the Fed, and the spender of last resort, the government. These two can and will blow up the system. I believe they will wait until the next crisis and the whiff of deflationary depression before they fire up the printing presses. That crisis is coming very soon, at the end of the summer or fall. The money and emergency measures are worn out. The fact that none of the underlying problems that caused the 2008 crisis have been resolved. The only thing that has happened is that instead of corporate problems, we now have national problems. In this movie, Greece will play a role of Lehman Brothers, and the United States will play the role of AIG. The problem is there is nowhere to kick the can down the road, and there is no world government to absorb the debt yet. So this leads me to the top five places not to be when the dollar collapses. Number one, Israel. This Anglo-American beachhead into the Middle East was first conceived by the most powerful family in the world, the Rothschilds, in 1917. The Balfour Declaration said that there will be a Zionist Israel years before World War II and the eventual establishment of Israel. Israel has not been a very good neighbor to its Muslim nations and has always had the two biggest bullies on the block at its back. When the dollar collapses, the United States will have much too much on its plate, both domestically and internationally, to worry about such a non-strategic piece of land. This will leave Israel very weak at a time when tensions will be high. This very thin strip of desert land will not be able to withstand the economic reality of importing its food and fuel, or the political reality of being surrounded by Muslims. Number two, Southern California. The land of fruits and nuts turns into Battlefield Los Angeles. 20 million people packed into an area that has no water, and thus food, is not good, to say the least. Throw on top of the huge wealth disparities and the proximity to a narco state, and this does not bode well. We have seen riots from Rodney King. What will happen when the dollar is destroyed and food and fuel stop coming into this area? People will get desperate and do crazy things, especially when a huge proportion of its citizens are on antidepressants. If food and fuel cannot get in, what about Prozac? At a time when people's worlds are falling apart, they lack the ability to
to deal with this new paradigm. If people come off these drugs too fast, they will suffer psychotic breaks, and you will have thousands of shootings or suicides. Number 3, England, the land of the Big Brother and former empire of the worldwide slave and drug trade, will suffer heavily. The stiff upper lip that the British elite ingrained into the sheeple will not work anymore as the British population explodes. The human character will sacrifice and unite for a foreign enemy, but not if the enemy has always been the elite. The Anglo-American Empire may pull off another false flag to distract its population, but I feel this collapse will happen before they pull it off. This will make all eyes point at the British elite as solely responsible for this catastrophe. We have seen massive riots for soccer matches with hooligans. What will happen when this island with very little food and fuel gets cut off? Number 4, New York City, another large urban area living too high on the dollar hog. There is little doubt that all of the wealth in New York City, New Jersey, and Connecticut is derived off of Wall Street wealth. The savings and investments of the whole nation and much of the world flows through this financial capital. As the world wakes up to the massive financial fraud, this will lead to the destruction of capital like we have never seen before. This will have tremendous effects on the regional economy, as people driving in Mercedes suddenly wonder where their next meal is coming from. Number 5, Washington, D.C. The political collapse of the federal government will wreak havoc on the hugely inflated local economy, as more and more states find it necessary to assert their natural control. The federal government will suddenly lose power and importance as the whole world suffers from a global Hurricane Katrina. The money that they create and spend will become worthless, and the government minions' pensions will evaporate. Millions that once relied on the ability to force others to send their money to them will learn that the real power has always been at the most local level. Massive decentralization will be the answer to globalization gone mad. Local families and communities will forego spending money and power out of their community as they will care about their next meal and keeping warm. As Ayn Rand once said, you can ignore reality, but you cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. To sum up, those areas that have lived highest on the hog in the dollar paradigm will most likely be the worst places to live when the dollar collapses. Many of you will see this video with passing interest, but rest assured, this dollar collapse is coming. It is a mathematical inevitability. We will not be as fortunate to muddle through this collapse like we did in 2008, when it was a corporate problem. This time around, it is a national and global problem. The global Ponzi scheme has run out of gas. As the demographics decline, as cheap abundant oil declines, as hegemonic power declines, this comes at a time when we reach the exponential or collapse phase of our money. The irresistible force paradox says, what happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object? We are about to find out when infinite money hits a very finite world.
Okay, there you have it. The whole paradigm right there in a nutshell. Area code 901, are you with us? 901, come on in. 901. Okay, no 901. I'm going to go back and open up the lines and see if anybody have any more comments that
The number to dial in this broadcast is 310-982-4184. Lisa, are you still with us? Okay. Eric, 412. Come on
I'm
in.
I'm still here. I'm still here listening.
Okay.
I'm just taking in, you know, the information, and, you know, when I hear it, for the Caucasian it'll be bad, for people of color it'll be worse. And
the rich are going to suffer too, because the upper middle class, the people who are just accustomed to always having a nice plus job and never hit the lick of the stick, and all of a sudden there's no more money.
They're going to kill everybody. They, you know what they do when they lose their money? They kill the whole family. They kill the wife. They kill the kids, and then they kill themselves. That's what they do. Because that money is just their end all be all, and they kill everybody. They'll kill their mama. They don't care who they kill. You take their money, and they're coming. They're coming to get somebody, and we have to be ready. I just talked to my husband, and I was talking to my uncle in Philadelphia about the type of guns that I want to get. He told me that his cousin on his mother's side is ex-military. He does sharpshooting and all that. I said, if I buy a rifle to learn how to shoot from 200 yards away, will he come and train me? He said he would be happy to come and train me. That's where my mind is. That's where I am. Yes.
Now, that's kind of rough.
That's all right.
You say you got you want to try to fire a rifle that will hit the target at a distance of 200 yards? What you talking about? With a 50 caliber? How you going
to
hold
that? I'm telling you, Taharka, listen to me. I'm serious. I want to learn how to sharpshoot. I want to learn how to do it all. I'm serious. I'm very, very serious, because when you take away their money, folks, I mean, but even now, if we look at our neighborhoods right now, folks are coming after you if they think you have a little bit. I've known this for a long time, but I keep recalling your story about the chickens and the eagle. If you live in a neighborhood and you look like you have a little more than most in that neighborhood, they are plotting and planning.
Oh yeah, yes sir. Especially when that crime.
And I'm
comes.
Talking about the people that look like you and I. They are
That's
plotting
right.
and planning. And you watch the news here in Pittsburgh. These people here, they're shooting and robbing people in the middle of the day.
Oh yeah,
11, 12 o'clock in the middle of the day. They don't even wait till nighttime.
I know.
So if you see it now, it's going to get worse. Going to get worse.
Hello,
yes,
Brother
right.
Parker.
Hey, 240. Tell me who you are. Come on in. What you think about
it? My name is Dao. My name is Dao. Calling
okay.
out DC.
What's on your mind, Dao?
This thing is getting very dangerous. Mm-hmm. And our people are running like chickens with their head cut off, and the unity is kind of slow getting together. I was listening to how you played the audio about the major cities and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the rich people are going to do, and the rest of the Caucasian people, Joe Sixpack, think he's going to be a part of it. They are not going to be a part of what's about to happen. They're just using them to carry out on a small scale to keep us occupied while they ready to drop the hammer on everybody's head. Another thing we should all be looking, they got like Berkeley websites where you get water bottles there's a website where you can take a mug of water and swish it around in a little thing, and then water turns clean if you have to get out the way and keep moving. We need to get stuff like that. Those mm-hmm. water bottles that you can take mug water, dirty water, and make it clean and keep it moving.
Right. Well, come on in, 336.
Hello.
336. Hey, tell me who you are. What you think about this?
Peace, peace.
Peace.
This brother Dwayne Moyer at High Point, North Carolina.
Okay, brother, what you think about this economic collapse thing, man, and this stuff here?
Oh, it's real. It's real, and it's going to happen. Me and my wife, we're preparing. You know, we brought 10. See, I'm ex-military, 9 years in the military. I'm a combat veteran. I'm a disabled veteran, but I'm able-bodied. Served in the first Gulf War. I just know that it's going to happen, and you need to prepare yourself. And see, people think that you just have to have different type of guns, and you're going to have to protect yourself and the things that you have. Now, there's air rifles that they sell in certain stores like Walmart and places like that. These air rifles are powerful, and they'll still do damage. You know, they'll still do kill. And people don't recognize that. You don't have to go and buy all these firearms. Go ahead and buy some of these pellet rifles and things of that nature. They got scopes and everything. I have a couple of them. You know, and these things are deadly, you know, and they're legal. So you can utilize those things, you know, until if you can't say, like, certain people who are convicted felons or whatever the problem may be, you know, or that you just really don't want to handle guns, but the real gun. But, yeah, you can get these pellet rifles, man, and they got pellets that will penetrate your skull, you know.
Oh, yeah. I know all about
they are that powerful. So, I'm willing to teach anyone, help anyone learn how to grow, because I have my own garden. I just put a video on Facebook, picked my first tomatoes today, and I picked some squabs.
That's what we do out here. We have East Side Farms, North Side Farms. We grow organic fruits and vegetables and stuff. We have the Morris Summit down here. Let me open up this other line. Area code 202, come on in. We only have a few minutes. 202.
Hey, can you hear me?
Hey, man. Yeah, he's loud and clear.
Yeah,
what's
how you doing today, DeHaka? This is L. Bay.
I'm just what you think about this stuff,
here's
man?
Here's what's going on, man. This thing is going to happen quicker than we think. I had it happening before Obama leaves or after he leaves. Something's going to happen because you and a lot of times, because anytime that you look at FEMA, they're building all of, they have all them coffins built and all the building now. Any major city like D.C., because I'm from Washington, D.C., there's this massive building all over the place, and it's getting to the point that people of color cannot afford to live nowhere in this city. So we figure it's just a matter of time before this thing crashes, because you got must remember, every time they got a plan, they get a 40, 30-year plan, the plan they have don't always work out the way they think it's going to work out.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be like 1968 all over again, or worse. Only this time it's going to be worse than 68, and it's going to be all over the nation.
Looting. Yeah, we're talking about a
people
national
food.
Crisis.
Something's
going to
happen.
Have some skills, some training, some weapons. And most importantly, the skill and the knowledge of survival and the ability to grow our own food. And we need to start
growing
food.
Yeah,
doing
I mean, I started
now.
Growing my own food.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, the only people.
Gardens, everything.
You know who the only people going to be really safe? People in rural areas.
That?
Rural area, like somewhere in the woods, people live in the woods, not in the major cities. They have a better chance than we do.
In any major cities,
this church, you're not going to have no, it's not, it's going to be, yeah. So, and then the gas station won't shut down, ain't going to be no gas. I guarantee you have. I see it, the handwriting is on the wall, but people not paying attention. But that's just
right.
My comment. They get off. But, you know, like I said, you can look at the plan because look at all the banks are getting desperate.
They're charging fees. Every time you go in the bank, they're charging fees for cash and check if you don't have an account there. And they ain't number pimps anyway. The only real banks is the Federal Reserve and, Treasury Department, you know, Treasury Direct
they
account.
Out of gas
but,
too.
You know, they're out of gas, too. Everything is about ready to go. This thing is on life support.
Well, yeah, no doubt. Right
but,
now.
And you wait. And this radio show won't be on when this shit go down.
No. That's why we're trying to get it all in right now. And, brother, I thank you for calling
down
to the close, man. thank you for chiming in. All right, Moses, we come to the close of the broadcast, and I hope you all got something out of this thing. And I would like to encourage you to listen to this stuff over and over so you can get this down to a science. There's a lot of important information dropped here, especially at the outset about the 25 things to do. We definitely need to write down this. For those of us who don't have any skill, don't have any military training, we're going to have to face this battle, look it dead in the face. And so if you are not prepared, then we're going to have some serious consequences to deal with. Now, if you got a family, you need to prepare now to protect your family. If you love your wife, you love your children, you need to do something to protect your family. Okay, that's just the bottom line. There ain't no doubt about that. Anyway, I certainly appreciate all of you all for being in here. And I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And until next time, you all have a good evening. Good.
My name's Ed Snowden. I'm 29 years old. I work for Booz Allen Hamilton as an infrastructure analyst for NSA in Hawaii.
What are some of the positions that you held previously within the intelligence community?
I've been a systems engineer, systems administrator, senior advisor for the Central Intelligence Agency, solutions consultant, and a telecommunications information systems officer.
One of the things people are going to be most interested in trying to understand who you are and what you're thinking is there came some point in time when you crossed this line of thinking about being a whistleblower to making the choice to actually become a whistleblower. Walk people through that decision-making process.
When you're in positions of privileged access, like a systems administrator for these sort of intelligence community agencies, you're exposed to a lot more information on a broader scale than the average employee. And because of that, you see things that may be disturbing, but over the course of a normal person's career, you'd only see one or two of these instances. When you see everything, you see them on a more frequent basis, and you recognize that some of these things are actually abuses. And when you talk to people about them in a place like this, where this is the normal state of business, people tend not to take them very seriously and, you know, move on from them. But over time, that awareness of wrongdoing sort of builds up, and you feel compelled to talk about it. And the more you talk about it, the more you're ignored, the more you're told it's not a problem, until eventually you realize that these things need to be determined by the public, not by somebody who was simply hired by the government.
Talk a little bit about how the American surveillance state actually functions. Does it target the actions of Americans?
NSA and the intelligence community in general is focused on getting intelligence wherever it can, by any means possible, that it believes on the grounds of sort of a self-certification that they serve the national interest. Originally, we saw that focus very narrowly tailored as foreign intelligence gathered overseas. Now, increasingly, we see that it's happening domestically. And to do that, the NSA specifically targets the communications of everyone. It ingests them by default. It collects them in its system, and it filters them, and it analyzes them, and it measures them, and it stores them for periods of time, simply because that's the easiest, most efficient, and most valuable way to achieve these ends. So while they may be intending to target someone associated with a foreign government or someone that they suspect of terrorism, they're collecting your communications to do so. Any analyst at any time can target anyone, any selector anywhere. Where those communications will be picked up depends on the range of the sensor networks and the authorities that that analyst is empowered with. Not all analysts have the ability to target everything, but I, sitting at my desk, certainly have the authorities to wiretap anyone, from you or your accountant to a federal judge to even the president if I had a personal email.
One of the extraordinary parts about this episode is that usually whistleblowers do what they do anonymously and take steps to remain anonymous for as long as they can, which they hope often is forever. You, on the other hand, have decided to do the opposite, which is to declare yourself openly as the person behind these disclosures. Why did you choose to do that?
I think that the public is owed an explanation of the motivations behind the people who make these disclosures that are outside of the democratic model. When you are subverting the power of government, that's a fundamentally dangerous thing to democracy. And if you do that in secret consistently, you know, as the government does when it wants to benefit from a secret action that it took, it'll kind of give its officials a mandate to go, hey, you know, tell the press about this thing and that thing, so the public is on our side. But they rarely, if ever, do that when an abuse occurs. That falls to individual citizens, but they're typically maligned. You know, it becomes a thing of these people are against the country, they're against the government, but I'm not. I'm no different from anybody else. I don't have special skills. I'm just another guy who sits there day to day in the office, watches what's happening, and goes, this is something that's not our place to decide. The public needs to decide whether these programs and policies are right or wrong. And I'm willing to go on the record to defend the authenticity of them and say, I didn't change these. I didn't modify the story. This is the truth. This is what's happening. You should decide whether we need to be doing this.
Have you given thought to what it is that the U.S. government's response to your conduct is in terms of what they might say about you, how they might try to depict you, what they might try to do to you?
Yeah, I could be, you know, rendered by the CIA. I could have people come after me or any of their third-party partners. You know, they work closely with a number of other nations. Or, you know, they could pay off the triads or, you know, any of their agents or assets. We've got a CIA station just up the road in the consulate here in Hong Kong, and I'm sure they're going to be very busy for the next week. And that's a fear I'll live under for the rest of my life, however long that happens to be. You can't come forward against the world's most powerful intelligence agencies and be completely free from risk because they're such powerful adversaries that no one can meaningfully oppose them. If they want to get you, they'll get you in time. But at the same time, you have to make a determination about what it is that's important to you. And if living unfreely but comfortably is something you're willing to accept, and I think many of us are, it's the human nature, you can get up every day, you can go to work, you can collect your large paycheck for relatively little work against the public interest and go to sleep at night after watching your shows. But if you realize that that's the world that you helped create, and it's going to get worse with the next generation and the next generation who extend the capabilities of this sort of architecture of oppression, you realize that you might be willing to accept any risk, and it doesn't matter what the outcome is, so long as the public gets to make their own decisions about how that's applied.
Why should people care about surveillance?
Because even if you're not doing anything wrong, you're being watched and recorded, and the storage capability of these systems increases every year consistently by orders of magnitude, to where it's getting to the point you don't have to have done anything wrong. You simply have to eventually fall under suspicion from somebody, even by a wrong call, and then they can use the system to go back in time and scrutinize every decision you've ever made, every friend you've ever discussed something with, and attack you on that basis to sort of derive suspicion from an innocent life and paint anyone in the context of a wrongdoer.
We are currently sitting in a room in Hong Kong, which is where we are because you traveled here. Talk a little bit about why it is that you came here, and specifically there are going to be people who will speculate that what you really intend to do is to defect to the country that many see as the number one rival of the United States, which is China, and that what you're really doing is essentially seeking to aid an enemy of the United States with which you intend to seek asylum. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So there's a couple assertions in those arguments that are sort of embedded in the questioning of the choice of Hong Kong. The first is that China is an enemy of the United States. It's not. I mean, there are conflicts between the United States government and the Chinese PRC government, but the peoples inherently, you know, we don't care. We trade with each other freely. You know, we're not at war. We're not in armed conflict, and we're not trying to be. We're the largest trading partners out there for each other. Additionally, Hong Kong has a strong tradition of free speech. People think, oh, China, great firewall. Mainland China does have significant restrictions on free speech, but the people of Hong Kong have a long tradition of protesting in the streets, of making their views known. The internet is not filtered here, no more so than any other Western government. And I believe that the Hong Kong government is actually independent in relation to a lot of other leading Western governments.
If your motive had been to harm the United States and help its enemies, or if your motive had been personal material gain, were there things that you could have done with these documents to advance those goals that you didn't end up doing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anybody in the positions of access with the technical capabilities that I had could, you know, suck out secrets, pass them on the open market to Russia. You know, they always have an open door, as we do. I had access to, you know, the full rosters of everyone working at the NSA, the entire intelligence community, and undercover assets all around the world, the locations of every station we have, what their missions are, and so forth. If I had just wanted to harm the U.S., you know, that you could shut down the surveillance system in an afternoon, but that's not my intention. And I think for anyone making that argument, they need to think, if they were in my position, and you know, you live a privileged life, you're living in Hawaii in paradise and making a ton of money, what would it take to make you leave everything behind? The greatest fear that I have regarding the outcome for America of these disclosures is that nothing will change. People will see in the media all of these disclosures. They'll know the length that the government is going to grant themselves powers unilaterally to create greater control over American society and global society. But they won't be willing to take the risks necessarily to stand up and fight to change things, to force their representatives to actually take a stand in their interests. And the months ahead, the years ahead, it's only going to get worse until eventually there will be a time where policies will change, because the only thing that restricts the activities of the surveillance state are policy. Even our agreements with other sovereign governments, we consider that to be a stipulation of policy rather than a stipulation of law. And because of that, a new leader will be elected. They'll flip the switch, say that because of the crisis, because of the dangers that we face in the world, you know, some new and unpredicted threat, we need more authority. We need more power. And there will be nothing the people can do at that point to oppose it. And it'll be turnkey tyranny.